reload this week's news with Eitan McKaylee and Amanda Finicky, Chicago Tribune Inc. columnist Tracy Swart, and another episode of The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. Now, here's your host, a man who now has to think of a new Halloween costume, Justin Kaufman.
First, I was going to be Sean Spicer. I thought that would be funny. No one cares anymore. Then I was ready to be Steve Bannon. I had the wig. Everything's set. And now he's out. No one's going to remember by Halloween. So I guess I'll just go as the Mario Brothers. This is the plan all along. It was a great costume. Half Mario, half Luigi. Like right down the middle. That's how real avant-garde piece of work that I was working on before I decided to go political. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight, this beautiful Friday. If you're driving out of town, if you're just you're wrapping up work, maybe enjoying a cold one on the porch, or perhaps, like us, getting ready for your shift to work tonight and through the weekend, we got you. We're riding shotgun tonight. Got a great show. We're going to reload this week's news. A lot to talk. Not a lot to talk about. Not a lot. Nothing happened. No. I feel like it was just all getting ready for the eclipse. It's all eclipse news. Besides Steve Bannon, besides Charlottesville, besides pretty much those two things.
Mitchell Trubisky do anything?
No, that was last week.
Oh, that's right.
That was
right,
last week. Yeah. He practiced this week. Amanda Vinicky from TTW will be here, as well as Eitan McKaylee, journalist. And this would be a good week for Amanda, too, because we could talk about, and I feel like it kind of falls into the underreported category because of all the news that happened this week on the national level. We did not talk much about what happened in Springfield around school funding and what the House did this week, essentially to kick the can down the road for another week to override the mandatory veto. So we will talk about Springfield. Amanda covers Springfield for WTTW. She'll be here, and we can talk about Democrats Day without a fair, which happened, and everything else that happened down in Springfield this week. That's coming up tonight, 312-981-7200. Also, should we be watching Bachelor in Paradise? Pete says yes. The rest of us say no. I don't know. I kind of feel like I know the personal answer to that question. But I wonder, after this week, they started the Bachelor in Paradise. And, of course, this year has already been marred by what possibly could have been. I don't know. I don't know if you call it assault, if it's alleged assault, what happened on the set that stopped production of the show. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Warner Brothers did an investigation to say nothing happened. So let's turn the machine back on. So now all the contestants are back down there. This week it started. They had double episodes at the beginning of the week. And one of the episodes was like a special after school special. It was yeah. Essentially the host talking about consent to the contestants, which is a strange thing to do on a show that's about drunken hookups. So
I don't watch it enough to know how they put these shows together, because on Monday I watched it and I'm, you know, all excited. Chris Harrison comes out and like is in his, you know, in his special, you know, the special session, no shoes still though on the beach, and saying like, we're going to break this all down for you. You know, a lot of things happen, but first we want to show you what happened before all the terrible stuff went down.
Right.
So then we're watching. I'm like, wait a minute, they're not going to tell us what happened in this episode? And then I realize there's two episodes, Monday yeah. and Tuesday.
Right.
I'm like, so I got to come back and watch another hour episode?
Well, Tracy Swart's going to join us tonight for another episode of our episode of Reality Check. And we're going to talk about Bachelor in Paradise because it has Chicago contestants on it. But it's also, I mean, it really is. There's a lot of thought pieces that have come out this week about whether or not we should even be watching this show. Are you a bad feminist if you're not watching? If you are watching the show, I mean, you get to a certain point where it's there's some kind of frayed, ugly pieces of this where, you know, things happened, corporations investigated, they quickly were like, nope, no problem, get back in there, and it's just the premise of the show overall is to is much different than The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where it's about love. This is about hooking up. So the question is, are you a bad person for watching it? Pete excluded. So that's coming up a little bit later in the hour. That'll be after the 7:30 news. Also tonight, The Frying Pan's back. Woo! That's right. We're very excited. Steve Gadlin, our master inventor, entrepreneur, innovator, man who won on the show Shark Tank, got a development deal with Mark Cuban. He brings his new ideas to the download first before he brings them to Mark Cuban himself. He brings them here to workshop. And I know, and this used to be, and you know, this is one of the earliest segments we ever did on the show. And we've kind of scaled it back to a once a month thing just for Steve's schedule. He's gotten very busy. A lot of these ideas that he tries out with us that may not work here, he does pitch them other places. So he has a lot of things in the hopper. So he has less and less time for us here at the download, but we enjoy that he gives us time. And tonight, I have a feeling, I can tell when Steve is excited about an idea. The texts start coming around Tuesday, Wednesday. He gets very playful. I've got an idea that's going to be a winner. Puns. You know, I don't ask what the idea is. I don't know what the idea is until Steve pitches it in the 10 o'clock hour. We should do a documentary on the behind the scenes of the frying pan. Because I don't want to know. I don't want to make any preconceived notion. And I have a lot of questions and curiosity on exactly what the idea is and what might be some of the weak points of it. But I'd like to defer to the listeners to let them take the lead and just kind of drive it and make sure we get to the breaks in the news. But tonight I have a sneaking suspicion that Steve has learned the error of his ways in the past. Last month, the month before that. And tonight he's going to come through with his best idea yet. Now, I'm telling you, I just have a feeling. It's an August feeling. It's a middle, you know, it's a creative month. Less hours in the office. More opportunities to sit outside and let nature inspire you, inspire your creativity. So I feel like tonight would be the night for that. Right? You feel the same way, Pete, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to be a winner.
And, I think that a lot of people will call in and they'll be like, oh, this guy's terrible or this idea is terrible. And I'm like, if you could go, like if I went to the website and put in WGN Radio, the frying pan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the ideas of the past, like the vibrating car alarm, the mm-hmm. future of auto safety. Instead of a car alarm as we know it, he takes a page from cell phone technology. He makes it vibrate instead.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to shatter windows. I think that's where he went wrong.
Yeah, there's always a little bit something that takes it a little bit too far. He needs to scale those back a little bit.
How about the better handshake? Remember that one? The idea that it was almost like a buzzer, that when you went for your job interview and you gave your first handshake and that was important, that it was a grabber, like grab, mm-hmm. so you would stand out
mm-hmm.
among all the other participants and applicants. Yeah. You remembered from the handshake. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a lot of questions about when the grip, you know, how the electric current, there's a lot of things in there that weren't figured out. That's where usually it's the second or third mm-hmm. wave he runs into trouble. Yeah, so there's a lot of great stuff. Just looking at it right here, keeping the personality of your garden without having to tend to it. That was the rainbow dirt.
Yeah.
The idea of fake dirt.
I mean,
That one angered the gardeners.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of people are calling it. But as you're reading these, I'm like, I can't tell you how many times this week I get so irritated by car alarms. It's like, this is Steve Gadlin's idea. Right. I look at my lawn, I'm like, this is an ill repair or disrepair.
I wish I didn't have to mow this.
Right.
I wish I had rainbow dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I could do different things with it. Who cares if it's not environmentally friendly? That's where he ran into problems with that, the dye, the runoff. That's where the gardeners were like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Plus it would show that I was gay friendly.
That's right. A lot of different ways to go
mm-hmm.
with that.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm saying is give Steve a chance, because I think that sometimes in his approach and his pitch, he can turn people off in that mm-hmm. moment. But I think that these are good ideas at the core that just need a little bit of tweaking. So tonight, the frying pan coming up at 10 o'clock. I'm very excited about it. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman. Why don't we carry out? All All right, here are today's top stories. White House advisor Steve Bannon is out. No, not out in the sunlight. I mean, out of his job. Yeah. Controversial former head of Breitbart has stepped down as a chief strategist to Donald Trump. It's not apparent that this was his decision or the president's decision or John Kelly's decision or God's decision. But he's left the building with hopes to go back and get back into the Breitbart business. I'm convinced that this move and other surprising summer shakeups is really just to mess with Saturday Night Live. I mean, what are they going to do now? Right? Trump's keeping them on their toes. Bannon says that he's excited to get back to Breitbart, and he's now free. This is a quote, free, and I've got my hands back on my weapons. He also said he's definitely going to crush the opposition. Wait, is the opposition the New York Times or Eczema? Again? Also, fake news? Can we just call it out? The hypocrisy of this? So you're not even going to pretend that you're a newsman? You're not even going to pretend like to put on the fedora and say we're hard-hitting journalism? Nope, you're just going to be a mouthpiece? All right, good. I guess it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. So what's it mean? Well, it means that we're running out of contestants for this year's White House Apprentice. But I swear, I've seen a million of the episodes where Trump himself blamed the team captain for the poor performance of, say, a lemonade stand. You were the one that put Gary Busey in charge of lemons, Brett Michaels. You were the one. So at what point do we use the apprentice logic on the president himself? Something to think about there, or not, right? But I will say that I don't think we should shed a tear for this particular move. Bannon was a polarizing figure that was a Trump whisperer and probably pushed the president to some decisions and statements that were on purpose divisive, if not incendiary. And I'm not talking about Trump's toilet tweets. That's all the president. Unless Bannon's in the bathroom with him at 5:30 in the morning, which is possible. Maybe he can continue to do that on a consultant retainer. And then you add the fact that Bannon, too, got caught going off the record and complaining about, well, everything to a journalist. And you just wonder if we're better off as a country with Trump as president and Bannon far from him, right? Save the ideology for state government. Just fix the economy. So how did Trump respond? Well, today he lifted an Obama-era ban on disposable plastic water bottles sold in our national parks. Yes! Finally making America great again. Or at least dirtier. More lawsuits against companies that are allegedly taxing people incorrectly because of the sweetened beverage tax. Subway and Juul got it today. Add that to Walgreens and McDonald's. Here, you know what? I'll fix it all. Can I fix it all? Can I play the Judge Wapner here? Juul, hand out a couple more of those Monopoly stickers. We good? Subway, $4 footlongs. McDonald's, McRib, permanently. And Walgreens, open another lane. Boom. No need for lawsuits. I saved the day. And no diabetes. Hooray for all. A new report out says that the Asian carp they caught a couple weeks back, well, it passed the electric barrier. Yep, the analysis says that it indeed traveled through three different electric barriers. And that's a serious problem for, well, everybody. I've been told that the fish is like cockroaches. So if you see one, well, there's going to be a lot more. So I guess we have to invest in really tight Tupperware for Lake Michigan. Or some saran wrap. Or maybe just fog the lake. Take a couple days, we all stay at a hotel. I kid, but those seem to be the only ideas being floated right now. What's the plan, Stan? And in this case, Stan is Governor Rauner. Do you want to be the governor who's in office when the flying fish took over the playpen? Those EDM DJs, they're going to be so mad, they might even vote this time. The shoe store Foot Locker has reported a 28% loss in revenue this year because big brands like Nike and Adidas are going straight to the customer. When reached for comments, the Foot Locker employee, decked out in his referee uniform, said, "Yeah, well, we still have the Georgetown parkas and socks. Can I go on break?" Is that accurate, Pete? Pete Zimmerman, a Foot Locker alum, did that joke for him. In weather, sunny and warm today, which is just, you know what? It's not appropriate for mid-August. Unacceptable. I mean, I expect 40 and windy. What's this 80 degrees with sun and humidity? What do you think this is? August 18th? In sports, the Cubs welcome the Blue Jays to Wrigley today for a rare Toronto-Chicago matchup. So lots of Canadians wandering around town today. Hey, where's the Garrett's popcorn? Hey? Cubs made it much harder by almost blowing the lead, but held on to win 7-4. And they hold the one-game lead in the NL Central. The Cardinals play later tonight. Good to see Miguel Montero back at Wrigley, hitting weak singles through the right side. Classic Montero. Jake Arrieta pitched amazing again, probably because Montero reportedly apologized to him before the game. And they're going to need Arrieta, as word came out today that John Lester's heading to the DL for a 10-day stint. Although the Cubs aren't worried. I mean, are they ever worried? But who needs pitching when you have Javi Baez? Another home run today. He's making us forget about Addison Russell. Addison who? Addison Western? Yeah, you just head down till you hit Lane Tech. The school that was in that movie? The bodyguard? Not the Whitney Houston one. No, the one my bodyguard. The one they used to play on 9 all the time? Saturday nights? Addison who? The Sox continue to lose. Last night we got a reality check as Sox rookie Ronaldo Lopez got rocked. Gave up 5 earned runs in 4 innings, walked 4 guys, and was removed because of soreness on the right side. Oh no. Well, that was short-lived. Lush. I love how they just suck the joy out of it. Right now, this season is just about sucking the joy out of baseball on the South Side. But have no fear, the Sox are going to bring up Lucas Giolito, the other phenom in the trade for Adam Eaton. He'll pitch on Monday as part of a doubleheader against the Twins. Giolito was the number one prospect for the Nationals last year, came up and sucked it up. So let's hope he's fixed whatever eventually got him traded to the Sox. The big question, though, should I pick him up for my fantasy team? Not sure. You know? Any suggestions? The Bears head in Arizona for the second preseason game against the Cardinals. Probably not going to see Kyle Long, Jeremy Langford, Akeem Hicks, Danny Trevathan tomorrow. And late breaking, Jordan Howard, star running back last year, injured in practice. He's not going to play on Saturday. Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Wish we weren't going to see Mark Sanchez too, but just give Trubi the ball, right? As Adam Hoge said last night, the first big must-play-well game of Mike Glennon's career in Chicago, which is kind of awesome because he's only played, what, part of one game and it's the preseason? he's on the second preseason game. We're like, this is a must-play-well game for this kid. Yeah, not good. All right. Nobody get hurt. I'm going to tape the game so I can do film study like the pros. My fast-forward game so far, on point. I mean, this early in the season to have the fast-forward game down? Feeling pretty good. I'm feeling myself, as Beyonce says. Also, Cutler played well in Miami last night, prompting everyone from NFL.com to, well, no one else, to predict that Cutler's going to have a big year. Again, I hope you're ready for it to rain pick 6, Miami, because it's going to... I'd say week 1. That's what I'm guessing. Maybe preseason game 2, but that's where we're at. And finally tonight, are you ready for Monday's solar eclipse? Many area stores are sold out of the glasses you're going to need to wear to see it, because if you stare at the sun for an hour plus, you're probably going to go blind. Don't take it from me. Take it from that one guy from 1962 who's making the rounds. Everyone's going downstate because, you know, if you live in Chicago, you're going to look up and you're not going to see anything. I mean, it's going to be one star. Every night I see about one star, right? I look up and I'm like, oh, I feel like an astronomer if I see that one star. Look at that. Is that a star? Oh, no, it's just a plane. No, it's not a plane. It's just a street light. Yeah. That's the carryout for August 18, 2017. Hey, if you're celebrating a solar eclipse, we're selling a bunch of sun-themed food. Sun chips, sun-dried tomatoes, sun-fried steak, which is just meat left out too long. That's all it is. All right, coming up, we're going to get Tracy Swartz in, ink columnist at Chicago Tribune, to talk about Bachelor in Paradise. Of course, we're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. What's the biggest winners, losers, overreported, underreported, and which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 500 years from now? So download 720. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you tonight, my friend?
You know, Justin, the countdown to Eclipse 2017 mm-hmm. is underway. We here at WGN Radio, very excited about
the
event.
Yeah, it's exciting.
You know, it's so funny. I joke about it, but when I was out in Wyoming just a few weeks ago, I understand why people get geeked out about this kind of stuff. In Wyoming, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You could see every star.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
It's
unbelievable. I made the joke. I mean, living in Chicago, close enough to downtown, yeah, I look up and I'm like, it's not even gray. It's just... Yeah. It's colorless. Nothing's happening.
No.
Like I get out late. I mean, we get out 12:30, 1 o'clock, you know, and I look up and I'm like, the stars should be right there, but they're not. So I don't know what that means.
And I thought, you know, as a kid, I vacationed in northern Wisconsin a lot, and I thought the stars up there were great.
Yeah,
nothing
right.
on Wyoming.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Right, well, maybe
it'll be fun.
You should go to Wyoming, man.
Do you have your glasses, by the way? Did you get glasses?
You know what? I do. I didn't even know it was a big deal, and I got some. And then Pete was like, "Oh man, I've been searched. I've gone to 16 different places for them." And I'm like, "Well, I've got so many, I'll sell them to you. $15, $17.99. That's what I'm going. No, yes, I do have a pair. I think I'm going to come into work for the eclipse, and I'm just going to share it with everyone who doesn't have it. So everyone will get a look.
There you go.
Right?
All right.
Doesn't it feel like, I think this is the moment, Rob, that I think that we need to, and I'm sure Patty and Steve and others will talk about this, but this is a moment to come together as a country around the solar eclipse.
Sure.
And share your glasses. Like if everybody shares their glasses, there's one pair and you're like, your turn, down the line, stranger after stranger. And I think you'll see after the eclipse is over that we will be united as one.
You know what would be funny is if, you know, Monday afternoon after the eclipse, all the White House press corps showed up to the briefing with their eclipse glasses
they
on.
They should, right?
Anyway.
I would love to see Trump with those glasses on.
Yeah.
And look good. Almost Paradise. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, we talk a little reality television, of course, every Friday. Tracy Swartz from the Ink Column joins us from the Chicago Tribune to do our segment Reality Check, and where we talk about the Chicago storylines that are in reality television right now. Of course, the big show that's out and getting headlines for all the wrong reasons is the show Bachelor in Paradise, which debuted two episodes, Monday and Tuesday this week. And it took on less of a show about summer flings on an island in Mexico, and more after school special. Tracy Swartz
totally
joins us,
special.
Right? Doesn't it feel that way?
I was very surprised, but I don't think in after school specials they were really talking about consent and what it means to give consent, not at least the ones I used to watch, but it was interesting nonetheless.
Well, Tracy, let's talk about this because this show, just to give a refresher to people, it's really spurred a lot of thought pieces this week of whether or not people should even watch this show because of what happened during the production. We talked about it on the show months ago, but refresh people's memory that about what stopped production and why people are boycotting the show.
Sure. Earlier this summer, you know, they brought together these former contestants from The Bachelorette and The Bachelor, and the intent is for them to pair up at this Mexican resort. And basically what happened is these two contestants, Corinne and DeMario, had some drinks, and then some sort of incident transpired, and it was enough of a issue, a red flag, that a producer, you know, spoke up and said that something didn't look right, so they shut down production. Warner Brothers did an investigation, and they found that there was no misconduct. But sort of the damage was already done. People knew that the show was shut down. There are all these sort of rumors out there. People were coming out.
Yeah, contestants started talking to the media, right?
Right. And it was sort of finger pointing and, you know, maybe Corinne was too drunk to give consent, but DeMario had also had some drinks, and it was very confusing as to what had happened. And then they, you know, they found there was no misconduct, and then they resumed production, and then the show premiered this week, and they were supposed to sort of address what happened, and they didn't really address what happened. It was very, very odd. You know, we didn't really see much beyond there was Corinne, there was DeMario, they were in a pool, and then suddenly then they weren't on the show anymore. So as far as addressing what happened, that hasn't happened yet. Apparently, maybe individually, they each sat down and gave their side of what happened. Maybe we'll see that later on in the season. But it was a very disjointed premiere. The two-night premiere is 4 hours.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, you missed 4 hours if you missed the week. So it was very confusing. And then the second night, Tuesday night, they basically sat down, the contestant sat down with Chris Harrison, the host, and said, you know, that they wanted to come back. And then they sort of talked about consent, but they didn't really say what had happened. And as far as like who gave consent or didn't give consent. So it was kind of just a very confusing situation to
watch.
Yeah,
very bizarre. And to read about it, I didn't see it, but to read about it and before just today, just catching up on everything, it seemed to me the takeaway, the reviews, was that it was a little bit forced to sort of to address the issue without addressing the issue, making sure that they were almost transparent in the way that they were saying that Warner Brothers cleared them an investigation, nothing had happened, and then it became kind of a strange lecture about consent, race, and other issues among people who are probably not qualified to have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it was just. And then it was like, would you like to be back in paradise? And you've brought all these people back to Mexico. Of course they'd like to be back here. Of course they want to have fun and promote their products and, you know, maybe make out with somebody. So it was, I thought that the way that the network treated it, this situation, this very serious situation, I didn't think that they gave it the proper sort of exploration that we're all kind of hoping for, those of us who sat down and watched the 4 hours of it this week.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this show before. I mean, it is part of the Bachelor empire or the industry, if you will, but it's a show that has different rules and different setups, and it's also a different outcome. The idea really is to encourage couples to pair off, like you said, to make out, to have a party and see what happens. Let's have some fun. It's more like more of a throwback to some of the reality shows of the 90s at the beginning of the reality movement, where it was just like, let's party and film it. So there is a strange dichotomy of yes, you know, this stuff, there was drunken hookups and there were questions about consent, but that is at the core what they're trying to promote with this program.
It was very confusing as far as like what was the line. You never knew. I mean, people have done crazy things on this show, sexually, you know, with alcohol, and you never knew what the line was as far as how far you could take it. And then suddenly this was the line. So, you know, apparently when they came back, the contestants came back to Mexico, they had to, you know, agree to these new rules that said how many drinks they could have per hour. Of course, they've had this consent talk, but then it's like it then becomes, you know, how close can you get to that line? What is okay? It does feel a little dirty to watch the show.
Well, I mean, there's Tracy. I was going to ask because they talk about Warner Brothers investigating the incident. But there's still the part of this investigation that is the one that I think is intriguing is the production company and whether or not they could have stepped in and done something in filming the incident. I mean, that's what they were doing. They're filming the incident and they didn't stop because, again, as we're talking about it, that's the premise of the show. And the concept of that part of it's still kind of unresolved. But the idea of clearing the contestants of any wrongdoing, that's been cleared up.
Right. They found that allegations of misconduct were unfounded, but they didn't, you know, there was no report that was issued. They basically issued a statement. So what exactly happened, I don't think we'll ever know. With producers, the contestants in their sit down with the host, Chris Harrison, they made a point of saying, well, producers never give us any alcohol to drink and nobody ever encourages to do this or that. That was part of some of the allegations were that it was a setup. Corinne and DeMario were set up by producers to hook up. They were told that this is what your storyline is going to be, and they fulfilled their storyline, I guess, maybe too well. So they made a point this Tuesday episode of saying, well, producers don't tell us what to do, you know, but that was part of the allegations of what happened.
What about when you talk about the ratings, I guess that's what's going to move a show like Bachelor in Paradise. I mean, with all the thought pieces and the backlash and people talking about, you know, feeling dirty watching the show, does it have any impact on ABC's decision to air this product, or is people still watching it in droves and they'll keep doing it until people turn the channel?
You know, I haven't seen the numbers yet, but I think this is also a very difficult week to, like, watch this, you know, reality show. I know that it's usually a pretty good show to escape. But this came in a pretty difficult week in actual reality. So I don't know. From what I could tell, the audience wasn't there that you maybe would see with a Bachelor or the Bachelorette. The Bachelor is the highest of the three ranking of the three shows as far as audience numbers. I just don't know if people really wanted to subscribe to that based on what I saw on social media, but I haven't seen any, you know, official audience numbers.
Well, an interesting week for reality television, especially with all the issues surrounding it. But also, how did our Chicago guys do in the first round? Did they stand out? Did Digby and Bigby, did they do well?
Iggy and Diggy. Yeah. It was Desperation City this week. It was Desperation City.
Oh, no.
I'm going to describe, in case you don't know, the way the show goes. You know, in The Bachelorette and The Bachelor, usually it's one person giving out roses, and then you get eliminated if you don't get a rose. But on Bachelor in Paradise, each week it switches off. So this first week, it was the women giving out roses, and there were more men than women. And so basically, the guys, if you don't make a love connection quickly, you end up talking to women, sort of like selling yourself. So Iggy ended up making out with this woman Lacey. Unfortunately, I mean, literally, the conversation was very terrible. Like, the game was very terrible. He was just saying how, you know, he's 30, he doesn't play games, and would you like to make out? So they got right to it. And then next morning, her grandfather dies, and she has to leave the island, to leave Mexico, to go to home to take care of her family after her grandfather's died. And, you know, Iggy seemed remorseful for her, but then where is he going to get a rose now? So it became sort of, then you have to chat up everybody else. Who's going to give you this rose? Same with Diggy. Didn't really make a love connection, but you need somebody to be able to gift you the rose to stay around for another week, because then the following week, the guys are in control, and then they can give out the roses to the women.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, Tracy. I was worried about not understanding who gave who the rose on Bachelor in Paradise. So we will continue to monitor this show. I guess watch is probably the wrong word. We'll monitor the show.
Well, I watch it for you.
Yeah,
I
you
mean,
do.
I just saved you 4 hours of TV, mind-numbing TV.
Tracy Swartz joins us every Friday in our segment Reality Check to talk about reality television and the Chicago storylines. Of course, this week we talked exclusively about Bachelor in Paradise, which was a show that premiered this week, Monday and Tuesday, for 4 hours, as Tracy just alluded. Tracy, thanks for joining us, and we'll check in next week as we try to figure out what happens to Digby and Bigby.
Thank you.
Wonder if Bachelor in Paradise shows up in the reload this week. I didn't see it yet. Overreported, perhaps? No. Rabbit hole? Could be a rabbit hole story. Coming up, we reload this week's news. Biggest story? This is a tough one. I guess Charlottesville probably is going to take the cake, if you will. The sheet cake, if you will. But Steve Bannon... CNN says he was fired. CNN reported today that multiple sources say he was fired. This wasn't a resignation. It was kind of, you know, stepping down. It's always my favorite, step down.
Yeah. They said that he said, you know, you're going to be relieved of your duties or you can step down. That's what, like, Jim Acosta was reporting.
Right. So that's a big story today. I think, you know, to think about all of the storylines and... I mean, just an amazing amount of press that a chief strategist received in the first 8 months of a president's tenure. I can't think. I mean, I'm sure there are others and someone could call up, but I am Karl Rove. But I don't think even Karl Rove, to an extent, kind of came out. It wasn't automatic. You're not thinking of Karl Rove too much in maybe August of 2000 or 2001.
Yeah, it seems that his rollout has been a bit bumpy.
Yeah, I mean, there was a picture I saw today that showed Mike Pence, Vice President Pence, and President Trump, and surrounded by General Flynn, Rance Priebus. I'm mispronouncing the wrong
Rance
name.
Priebus?
It's Rance. Sean Spicer. and, of course, Steve Bannon. So all four of the advisors around the elected officials have been removed in 8 months.
He's new to this. You know, he's testing these out, not working. Try the next guy.
You know, there's something to be said, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the
He likes reload. Firing people. We've
he does like firing people. But, I mean, Steve Bannon, when I thought of Donald Trump and his run to the White House, I didn't necessarily think of Breitbart and Steve Bannon being like the same, cut from the same cloth. I felt at a certain point he adapted that or he evolved into taking on that persona. And the same with he fought at odds with the establishment, the Republican National Committee and the establishment, which is Reince Priebus and Sean Spicer and others. So there's this idea that a lot, you know, to be a president, he surrounded himself with a lot of people who brought different ideas to him. And I wonder at a certain point where he said, this is not a good fit. I don't like you guys. I don't like what you're telling me. I want my guys. I want my guys from New York that I worked with. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but the idea that these weren't necessarily his handpicked people. It's not like, I mean, you could say what you will about President Obama, but he was able to have Mayor Rahm Emanuel at the time, who had worked on his chair. You know, like they come from Chicago. They know each other. They have a relationship before they, you know, mm-hmm. kind of all come together. So I just wonder if that plays into it a little bit. I also wonder if it's, we love to point out that Pete, there's a lot of turnover in the Trump White House, but at the same time, maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe if you're right, maybe righting the ship was a little bit turbulent and they were able to fix those things and be able to get on the right path. So maybe that's the case. And like I said, in the carryout, I'm not shedding a tear that Steve Bannon's not whispering in the president's ear. Right? Just as a lot of people probably wouldn't be happy if the editor-in-chief of the Washington Post was whispering into a presidential candidate's ear or president at this point. So there's a lot to be said about that. So that's coming up. We're going to reload this week's news. Eitan McKaley and Amanda Vinicky. 312-981-7200 is coming up. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to reload this week's news. The biggest stories, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. What story took us down the rabbit hole? And, of course, which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? There's a lot to choose from, surprisingly. Today, a little bit tougher than usual. In studio with us tonight to help us reload this week's news, Amanda Vinicky. She's political reporter at WTTW here in Chicago. Amanda, great to see you.
It is great to be back.
And Eitan McKaley. Eitan, a longtime journalist in town who's also the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America from the Age of the Pullman Porters to the Age of Obama. Eitan, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too, Justin.
All right. So what a tremendous 312-981-7200. The phones are open. Of course, you can text, you can call, and we can talk about. Why don't we start with the biggest story of the week? And we kind of all agree. I mean, there are different offshoots to this story, but what happened on, I guess, started on Friday night and into Saturday in Charlottesville, Virginia, takes the cake as the biggest story of the week. Eitan, why do you have this one as the biggest?
Well, Justin, you nailed it when we were talking before the broadcast that this was people saw the images of guys with torches marching through the streets of Charlottesville in a very organized, very significant and scary protest. And then as the information came out later in the week from a Vice documentary that a lot of people saw and from a lot of other firsthand reports, it got even scarier because it turned out that these were actual Nazis and white supremacists who had been brought together for an explicit purpose of making a show of force.
You know, it's interesting because even in the weekend reporting of this, it was all, this was last weekend, it was really around the idea of this statue of Robert E. Lee in Charlottesville and this protest because some of the officials were going to take it down. And that's how it was sort of set up. And there was a death, of course, as a car rental. But as the story unfolded, you realize quickly that this wasn't about a statue at all. This was about a show of force. Even in the Vice piece, they talked about, some of the leaders talked about coming out to show force, to come off the internet and onto the streets to say we're apart. And this all sort of started to develop on Sunday and Monday, right when our president, President Donald Trump, started to talk about it. And That's really where the story got some gasoline, and that's where we're at right now.
Got lots of gasoline. I mean, I think this is the biggest story for a whole host of reasons. First of which, that car driving into a crowd is, of course, terrifying. I think there are so many things that happen in our society where we still kind of assume that that's not going to happen to me. That's not me. I'm not racist. Racist. We're in a post-racial society, right? No. This shows how big. It's not just a fringe group anymore. There are, I mean, this has surged up through the White House and people, of course, the president's comments taking off there. The car, as I said, that is an act of domestic terrorism and, well, an easy one. I think it has caused people, the Vice documentary that you mentioned, people are wondering, okay, gun control, what can we do there? But it's not just guns. I think that there's further the racist prevalence. And then further, of course, what it has meant for the Republican Party because of what Donald Trump said. You'd had a lot of Republicans really standing by their man, and we're seeing that begin to fracture. You know, so it is the biggest story for so many reasons.
Huge part of this story, too, about how you're seeing people want to stand up for the president they have in office, that they voted into office, and they believe in the Republican Party. And then you get to the point where this is off limits territory. This is territory. You even saw Arnold Schwarzenegger today mocking the president with a Facebook video where he said, this is what you should have said. But when we talk about hate speech and we talk about these groups and groups that have notoriously done this, isn't new. I mean, I think about our own struggles in Skokie in 1977 or whatever it was. But the idea being that there has always been, this is off limits, that everybody in major American politics says this is off limits. Yeah. This has to be denounced automatically. It doesn't matter what your party is. And Donald Trump flipped the script.
Well, look, this is the book that I wrote, which is a history of the Defender newspaper, which was a history of Chicago in the 20th century. I focused on one moment in which the Klan came to Chicago in the early 1920s. And this was part of a national movement. The Klan had gotten organized because of a movie, the first blockbuster movie, Birth of a Nation, which Woodrow Wilson, the president at the time, supported, actually screened in the White House for the cabinet and the Supreme Court. Well, Birth of a Nation also inspired the rebirth of the Ku Klux Klan, which had not existed previously. It became a national force in politics. It ruled politics in Indiana. And when it came to Chicago, it faced an coordinated and concerted opposition, which eventually drove the organization out of the city. But it was a fight in the streets, quite literally.
And that's one of the things I think when the president says both sides or many sides are fine people, all the things that have been thrown out about sides. I think that there's this, we always lose sight of the idea that, hold up for one second, let's once again figure out what this one side stands for. You know, that's it seems to get lost in there. Where you're like, this one sign stands for their race over everybody else's, eradication, violence. Essentially, what we've seen in the history of man, whether it be through Holocaust or through slavery or through what happened in the civil rights movement, they back up the words. And I think that's so, and that's where the president, to me, gets off course. Where you say, well, you're acting as if there's, and the other side is. But there is no other side. And I think you've seen so many people talk about this week that there is no other side. There's this side, and that should be the
There's
end
legitimately
of it.
No other side, I think, in this one. People, you can have an argument about monuments, whether they deserve to be there, where they deserve to be, and what it means. If they can be educational, you can't erase history. Have a debate about that, that you might say there are sides. But in terms of, no, Nazis are, that is an evil line of thought, to be a white nationalist movement. That is, of course, yeah. I mean, just outright denied.
Let me ask you, Eitan, is it foot in mouth for the president? Did he say the wrong thing at the wrong time? Or is this explicit? Is he backing and supporting the groups that are in question?
No, as I was suggesting, I think the white supremacist portion of this country is a consistent and at times dominant force in the United States. And it's not a surprise to me in a way that the white supremacist portion of the country would shoot up at this particular moment when we have these big changes in the media landscape, when suddenly media is a lot more democratized. You know, anybody, frankly, with a Twitter account can get out to the entire country.
A YouTube channel.
Easy. So this is that moment, and this is when, you know, the big chunk of the country that is white supremacist, which has always been about 30-40%, is there, and it's based largely in the south of the United States, because it's a way to have its constituents benefit from segregation and its successors in the South. In other words, the white people of the South are rich because the black people are poor. The black people are poor because of segregation and legal discrimination and everything else. And so that's a consistent feature of this country. Donald Trump is explicitly tapping into that and representing that. He's not hiding it at all. We're kind of making it seem like, what is really going on here? But he's waving that flag, you know, and the response that he's starting to get from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, from members of Congress, is because it's so explicit.
Let me ask you, Amanda. I mean, do you feel? I mean, you saw Bob Corker come out, others come out who quickly, and like I even mentioned, Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor of California, big name. But this idea that the Republican Party is distancing themselves, a lot of CEOs want out from the advisory committees and other places. Is this the kind of thing that could be a wedge for Donald Trump, that he doesn't have the support of the Republican Party moving forward?
It may be, but I think that you have seen a lot of Republicans condemn the words that Donald Trump said. They have condemned the thought behind it. They have not condemned the man himself, nor have they waded into his policies. They still are going to fight tooth and nail for their tax program. You're still going to see, I think, Republicans siding together on the Affordable Care Act. Again, those are very fair, of course, policy discussions to have. I think you are continuing to see Republicans walk a very careful and fine line for their own political futures. They are standing against Trump in this regard, but we are going to have to all watch. And I think that is the question. You know, we saw a lot of Republican congressmen. You had our own governor, Bruce Rauner, has been very careful in what he does and does not say about the president. I think for good reason in terms of his politics, as he's looking forward toward a reelection. He is in a very difficult position there, but at the same time, perhaps not a morally difficult position. I should say that every Republican that I talked to during the Republican Governor's Day at the State Fair was very clear that they found the notion abhorrent and that they disagreed with Trump's remarks. But again, they were not really willing to say very much about what that means for the party. Right, and they said, this is not our party.
Well, okay, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. You know, because the other story that I thought challenged Charlottesville, which is hard to do, but Eitan, you make an argument that they're connected. The ousting of Steve Bannon, the chief strategist in the White House, out today. Is, you know, they're telling the story that they had asked for his resignation weeks ago. But you say that this is more of a connection. There needs to be a fall guy to what happened this week, and Steve Bannon fits the bill.
In Chicago political terms, somebody's got to wear the jacket, and Steve Bannon is going to wear the jacket for this problem. We'll see. It's Trump is very good at deflecting generally, and he's been good at deflecting this issue. The fact that half of the people are now making an argument about Confederate statues and deciding whether we should keep Confederate statues up or not, and whether George Washington and Thomas Jefferson's statues also need to be included in the roundup of
a different issue altogether than what happened in Charlottesville.
And so Steve Bannon is another one of these
nice
tactics.
Little distraction,
and so I think Trump and you know it works for him.
Well, 312-981-7200, Eitan Michaeli, Amanda Vinicky in studio tonight. We'll definitely talk more about Steve Bannon. When we come back, let's start with the winners and the losers. Sound good? We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Reloading this week's news here in the Download, 720 WGN, Eitan Michaeli, Amanda Vinicky in studio. We did the biggest story of the week, which, of course, was Charlottesville, a little bit of Steve Bannon. But let's talk winners and losers. We'll start with the winners. You have on your list, Eitan, Mayor Rahm Emanuel gets a win this week. Why?
I think his path to re-election as mayor of Chicago is becoming both apparent and plausible. He's not been a great mayor. He's not really handled the budget situation of the city particularly well. He's not followed through on commitments of transparency or reduction of pay to play. He's done a horrible job, to just be blunt about it, when it comes to the homicide rate and the general state of crime in the city. There's peace in the public schools, but there's certainly not economic peace even there. So with all of those, he should have a very difficult situation when it comes to reelection. Nevertheless, there is not an opposition candidate out there that anyone can name. And now you can kind of see that even with anger, residual anger over the police abuses in the African American community, you can see a path to reelection, especially with Rahm Emanuel's public relations efforts on behalf of undocumented immigrants.
Well, I was going to say, this is about sanctuary cities, but it seems that Mayor Emanuel has carved out a niche that we kind of expected him to do when he said he wanted to be mayor of Chicago, which was to bring a national spotlight to the city. He's doing so in being the legitimate opposition to President Trump. Whenever President Trump puts anything out, it's the first mayor of the big cities to be like, "We're not doing that. We're not. This is how Chicago values."
We've seen through his emails. All right, so it is a very calculated strategy, and one that, again, I'm not going to say by any means that it is all PR. I'm not inside that operation, but the mayor plays that very deftly. We've seen through his emails the national media figures that he has reached out to try and get his name and Chicago's on their news stations, on people's TV screens across the United States. You're right. I think it is it's both a way where he can be a foil to Trump, but also after, of course, all that happened with Laquan McDonald, it is identifying more with being the more sensitive, back to liberal bastion and minority groups.
I will say this, Eitan, and you we've all in this room have been through city elections. You know, the idea that it used to be that you would have formidable candidates against a mayor like Daley, you know, whether it might be Jesse Jackson or even, you know, to an extent, Bobby Rush or once in a while. But my point being that there was a machine that Mayor Daley relied upon, and he could, there was never going to be anyone who was going to come up against that machine that could beat it. In this case, Rahm Emanuel doesn't have that machine, but he doesn't have a formidable candidate. If a candidate stepped up that was someone who was an up-and-comer, like at the time Jesse Jackson Jr. was, I'm not saying now, but the idea that someone who was a political had a name recognition and was young and was interested in the job, does he have the kind of machine to keep those kind of opponents from challenging him?
Well, Richard J. Daley, the first Mayor Daley, once said that if there wasn't a machine, he was asked why was the machine necessary, and the answer that he gave was if there wasn't a machine, we'd have rule by money and television. And that's what we have today, is that Rahm Emanuel has access to unlimited amounts of money and doesn't need to worry about a patronage army going around knocking on doors. He can also use his air dominance of the air war in political terms to snuff out any potential candidates. Look, Chuy Garcia said he's going to raise your taxes if he gets reelected. Rahm Emanuel said, no, I won't. And then he did.
They actually said Chuy was going to do it. Chuy, if you elect this guy, he's going to raise the taxes like it's never been raised before. Yeah. He won, and he did it.
And Chuy said, we need more police. Rahm said, no, we don't. And then a few months later said, yes, we do, promised to add more police, and hasn't. So it's been this.
Let me ask you guys both, as observers, when it comes to the fight over sanctuary cities and this idea of withholding money from the Justice Department for criminal justice appropriations in the city, and the city pushing back for the lawsuit against them, can the mayor win in this kind of thing to say that the city of Chicago is not going to follow the rule of the law, the rule of the country's law? Because that's what it seems like the Justice Department is arguing, that if the city doesn't do what the federal government says you have to do, you don't get the money. It's pretty cut and dry.
I am no attorney, and there are all sorts of stipulations all the time in order to receive federal grants. So that is not outside the norm. However, I think because of the deeper question in terms of what the Justice Department is asking in terms of what is to be done with undocumented immigrants and asking cities to hold them despite there being actual no crime behind it, I have read very often lines from attorneys that say that, yes, there is very great potential for the city of Chicago to come on top with this. I mean, so I'm not an attorney. I don't know.
Neither am I.
It also has to be said that advocates for undocumented immigrants in Chicago say that while work for undocumented immigrants is plentiful, there's plenty of opportunities for employment in the restaurant and construction industry in particular in this city. Law enforcement is not cannot be trusted to not turn you in to immigration authorities, and even in the jails, there's not a guarantee that you won't get turned over to immigration authorities. So it's not like undocumented immigrants in Chicago feel like they actually have sanctuary. Sanctuary is more of like a brand name for a certain kind
Interesting.
Of policy.
Yeah, because if you hear it from the Justice Department, they act as if, you know, you full reign here. You can do whatever you want if you're undocumented, and that's got to stop. Even to the point, which I thought was a head scratcher, with where Sessions said, you know, some
of the
violent crime, from undocumented immigrants, and we got to take care of that. I thought that was a head scratcher for someone who's in Chicago and covers the news. It doesn't feel like that is the source of where our violent crime is.
That's what you had the superintendent of police say. It's not like Jeff Sessions is in Chicago often. If he does, he presumably flies in, does a press pop, and leaves. I mean, I think that is, again, very much probably a political calculus, a way to frame the argument. If not, as we've been talking about, there are a whole host of beliefs in this nation. And so it may be a true belief on his part. But yeah. I think that the people who are experts in this say, of course, there is no evidence that actually proves that. And in fact, they would say it is the opposite.
Yeah.
Because if you have immigrants who are scared to report a crime, then that's going to be the problem.
Amanda Vinicky, Eitan McKaylee in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We're getting through the winners. We've just gotten through Mayor Emanuel. There's some other winners and a whole slew of losers. Really good.
How do you
losers.
Really feel, Justin?
A lot of losers on the sheet right now. A lot of nominations for this week's loser. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Amanda Vinicky, the political reporter at WTTW here in Chicago, is in studio with us as well as Eitan McKaylee, who is the longtime journalist and observer and the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America from the Age of the Pullman Porters to the Age of Obama, and a new book you got coming out pretty soon. We'll talk about that some other time. Let's get into the winners and losers. That's where we're at right now. Before we move on to the losers, I want to say my winner, and I've warmed up to this. Last week,
there is a beginning of a pun
The sun is shining.
Last week
in the overreported category, we had the eclipse. It was just because it was so much. And this week, you would think that would ad nauseum continue. But I have to say that it's a win. The winner is science. The idea of astronomy or whatever you want to call it, because everybody is talking about it. Everybody wants to be a part of this. It seems that the social media apparatuses and the way that we've created all these communication
Neil
challenges.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is a hero.
We have finally used it in the right way, that it has worked to convince me to be excited about something that's going to happen.
Excited, educated. Do you have your glasses so you can protect your eyes? Okay, good, good, good.
Yeah.
What's your plan? What do you guys
I don't have a plan.
I'm going to Carbondale. If all plans out, I will be witnessing the total eclipse of the sun and of my heart. I'm really excited
about it.
That's what
I mean.
Pumped. I mean, Ozzy Osbourne's going to be down there. I sadly don't have tickets for that show, but maybe I'll see him walking the streets of Macanda, which is this smaller town than Carbondale. But yeah.
You have your glasses,
I have special glasses, although with a total eclipse, because there has been such excellent media coverage, I have learned that you don't actually need the glasses for a total eclipse, because it is just that, a total. Like, as soon as it goes partial, special. You should have the glasses anyway. Yeah. I'm taking two pair because I do not need to go blind because of this event. Well, if you get a scratch, evidently, you're supposed to toss them because that obviously light could enter. So anyway, but I agree. I mean, I think science is a winner. It's been fascinating to
the enthusiasm
learn
and
about
the passion.
It,
right? It's great to have.
But you're
a
right. It is overreported, and yet I love it. I welcome it.
There you go. Winners, science. All right, let's get the
hopefully it takes off and from listen, there, though. I mean, science, STEM, technology, what have you.
And it's an important point also because climate science, for example, has been under assault. So this is part of that landscape. This is part of that battle.
People get excited about it. Yeah. So yes, this is going to be a big deal on Monday. All right, so let's talk about losers as we talk about this week. And we've already kind of mentioned Steve Bannon. We talked a little bit about Trump.
Maybe. Real quick, I don't know if Bannon, I mean, yes, he's a loser of the day. He's no longer in the White House, but he's back already at Breitbart News. He has a major platform.
Maybe
he no longer has any sort of White House, you know, ethics rules to follow or anything. He's still, I would predict, I do not know the president or anything, but has Trump's ear. It does not seem as if there was a true, you know, division there permanently.
He says he's
so.
Going to support the president. Exactly. He wants him to win, and he's going to use, he's happy to have his weapons back.
Yeah.
And he's going to crush the opposition, which, you know, I think I heard the Washington Post editor-in-chief say one time. I don't know. Maybe not. the idea that, the call's been fake news and fake news to have a guy go back to his paper and say he's going to, now he's got his weapons and he's going to crush the opposition. That's strange talk coming from a guy who runs a media
site.
It's
still Breitbart. And I remember 4 or 5 years ago before Breitbart, you know, was super well known, but was already a malevolent force out there. I remember telling somebody, you know, if Breitbart tells you it's sunny out there, make sure you take an umbrella. I mean, their overall competence as a news organization will defeat them every time. You know, when they expose somebody and then find out that it's actually somebody with they give a video of somebody with the wrong name, or they made a connection that was the wrong connection. They're just not good at the journalism job. So let Steve Bannon go back there and try to establish himself as the alt-right or the neo-Nazi news source. I think that'll go as well as the other neo-Nazi news sources out there.
Well, I mean, I would also say, I wanted to say on the winner category, the social media sites cracked down on hate speech. We kind of saw that a little bit in the way that the government we weren't getting what we wanted out of the president, as everyone across the board, both parties were saying, this is not what we want from the president. There was swift action from sites like GoDaddy, Apple, PayPal, some others in there as well, Spotify taking white power music down. So there seemed to be a reaction to say that you know, it brought up the same issues we've had for a long time about what is free speech, what is hate speech, how does it all kind of play out?
With one big outlier, right? Like Twitter is holding out and not actually adhering to its own posted rules and letting people say basically whatever they want with impunity. But at some point, I think it's going to catch up with them also.
I have to say, I read a really fascinating article just a bit ago in terms of the creation, which you've got to figure is so easy and is important, I think, at this time of fake news, where there have been what it seems to be a bunch of fake Twitter profiles created with its, like, white sorority girls spewing basically white supremacy and hate, but it's all photos that they can find or, you know, taken off of Pinterest and aren't actually real individuals. But, you know, it spurs these conversations and a racial divide. And I do think that is, to move back to the losers category, the losers in general – democracy, the media at that point in time, where we all do need to be truly very cautious about what you read, about what you hear, about even, what you see.
I forgot what country it was, and I want to say it was an Eastern European country, but there's somewhere where, and we talked about this in one of the reloads, about that the women don't put up the pictures anymore on Facebook or social media because they continue to get stolen for memes, for other material to fake.
Isn't it a thing where people's pictures of their babies are getting stolen?
They
creepy,
steal them
weird,
and they
right?
create content, but they need that. They take your image and make you somebody else. And there's
Moldova,
a farm for that.
It?
Yeah.
Moldova.
And they said now they're not even, I mean, Facebook has got a crisis because no one will upload content. And anyway, I digress. All right, let's go on to losers. let's go back to local. This is a big week, I thought, for Springfield. And this, and I'm glad to have you here, Amanda, because, you know, just trying to make sense of it while there's bigger news that's coming out of Washington and Charlottesville. The idea that the House came back in session in the middle of August during the Illinois State Fair to do, I'm not even sure what they
what?
Did.
Dot, dot, dot.
But there, I mean, there a lot of the games that I thought we editorialized and we got to a point where we said, no more games, the budget's going to get passed, we're going to stop with the games, and Springfield's moving forward. This was a big
the
old
games,
game of Parcheesi.
They ain't stopping.
This was a huge game.
They still
game.
Haven't. I mean, I see your point in terms of what the House did or, in effect, actually didn't do in terms of voting on a bill that was really a replica of what Governor Bruce Rauner had wanted in his rewrite of the education bill that Democrats passed in the spring. I mean, you are seeing games play with that. And I think that's because so much is at stake. I mean, we call it a game, that's making light of a situation. But whatever comes of this has big ramifications in the short term, in that schools are waiting for money from the state. We're not going to see an immediate effect of that. I mean, this can stretch on for a while. And that is what Illinois politicians are really wizards at, is stretching things out until it gets to the point of crisis. And that's when they get something done, because that's when they're finally moved to reach an agreement. But it is further going to have ramifications for a while, because this is a formula Illinois hasn't updated in 20 years. We don't know how it's going to work.
Right,
so
right.
It is how schools are going to be funded. And it is going to be huge. I mean, there's a lot of talk. We could have a whole show on the debate between the governor and Democrats on what they want this new formula to look like. But at the heart of it, there is an agreement that Illinois needs to do something to move and make schools more adequately funded, particularly those that don't have any money, so that you don't have schools that have planetariums and others that are using books from 1972. So, I mean, that is, and that might be an exaggeration, but it might not be in terms of the books. The planetarium isn't. But
it's a big difference.
And this is going to have consequences for decades.
Now we've heard over and even before the veto and everything that the governor kind of agreed on the school formula funding. I mean, he
again, that's
that
what they agree on, and that
little
part,
that
big part, frankly,
90% of the bill, right? That, I mean, that's the number they've been throwing around. But this idea of the pension pickup and some of the other things that were in there, having an amendatory veto to take that stuff out for them to fight over, I see it as the same chunk of money that they've been fighting over for ideologically for about 2 years, where this idea of $200+ million that needs to go to pensions.
$200 million, I'm not going to say, obviously, I am a public media journalist. I'm not saying that, whoa, that is nothing. But in terms of this broader fight, it truly isn't. So you are correct on that point. I will say the governor's amendatory veto did a whole lot more. And that is fascinating, because while there was an expectation that it was just going to be the Chicago pensions, and that is something that maybe could have, we would have seen a far different ending. His amendatory veto does a lot more than that.
It changes
the
scope
basically,
of it. Yes.
It doesn't rewrite all of it, because you still have that same basic premise at the very heart of it, except for you do have a lot of people saying that some of what the entire point of this is instead there will be schools that will be punished, particularly in rural communities or even Chicago, that are losing population. Yeah. So the governor did a lot with his veto in terms
of a big part of the whole harmless was a big part of
yes,
what they put
I mean, this
through.
Is huge. Yeah. I think that you have to bring up, because again, this week with Charlottesville, there has so much been in the news in terms of what the racial state, where America is right now at this point in time. What is our identity? How are we going to deal with this? And a lot of attention was given to a cartoon that was produced by, frankly, he's a really talented cartoonist from what I've read. But made a cartoon about this education funding fight, where it was a little black kid asking for money, presumably a CPS child, because he had, a Cubs hat on. And then there's, a white guy who's got an empty pocket and given this kid change. And then the other pocket is TIF, and he's got, money spilling out of his pockets. And that has been seen by legislators on both sides as very insensitive and, in fact, racist. And I think that this could be very much something that will continue to trip the governor up, because he has this Illinois Policy Institute.
And
he's
it
hired
came from the Illinois
many
Policy
of these
Institute,
people.
Well,
and it's
tied with them.
And it's a narrow political point that they're making with this racist cartoon.
Right.
The narrow political point is that the city has money that has been set aside – that could be used potentially for the schools. It's not supposed to be used for the schools. It's not somehow withdrawn from the formula of money that is imbalanced against Chicago public schools. It's a specific policy point that the Illinois Policy Institute and Bruce Rauner would like to make, because they would prefer not to solve the funding formula, because that actually means that suburban schools in Illinois will have to bear an appropriate share of the burden, with, and that means their property taxes and their state taxes will eventually go up.
Let me do this. Let's take a quick break, because I want to stay on time, and we'll come back. We'll continue with Springfield, because I also want to talk about, is the Illinois State Fair. There's Governor's Day. There's the Democrats' Day, sort of, half, no. Progressives Day.
I mean, I had a lemon shakeup. We'll talk about it.
Amanda Vinicky, Eitan McKaley in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. This is Download Here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman with Amanda Vinicky and Eitan McKaley tonight. We are reloading this week's news. Still on the losers. We're talking about Springfield. I want to get some of the callers. Here's the text. 708 says, I don't feel my money should go to Chicago. It's from 708. I don't live there. I don't want to. I don't go there ever. Let Chicago figure out their own problems, make a liquor or made up tax so they can get themselves out of trouble they're in. I'm sure they can do that. Stop spending or cut back. I mean, you hear this argument, and Governor Rauner's done a good job of sort of perpetuating this. This is the argument that Chicago versus everybody else.
I'm a resident of Chicago, and I understand how the guy feels. But the reality is that right now, Chicago taxpayers pay for pensions for teachers from all over the state and pay for our own teachers' pensions. We're helping the rest of the state, not the other way around. And there are multiple ways in which Chicago also pays the bills for big parts of the state. I never go to Schaumburg or Naperville. I'm sure I have been there once or twice. They're perfectly nice places, but I don't really think it's right that my tax dollars go to support those communities. They're well off and can support themselves.
Well, Amanda, I mean, this has been a big part of Governor Rauner's
messaging
about the idea that Chicago and Chicago needs a bailout and Chicago should solve their own problems, even with the TIF. That's what this is all about. But it's Chicago versus the rest of the state. That seems to be the platform for a 2018 reelection campaign.
That does seem to be the let me just say that there are Democrats who, of course, have many reasons to be wanting to make Governor Rauner look bad, obviously, with an election on the horizon, but that say that sort of rhetoric is going to cause long-term damage. If you talk about losers, that Illinois is a vast loser in the long run because of just of that, pitting communities against one another. You have a lot of rural, again, downstate school districts, communities that need that money. If they go belly up, that causes more long-term hurt down the road because you have unemployment. Who knows what that means in terms of being able to sell your home, in terms of where do people go? I mean, like, what have you? You can go into a whole cycle. But yes, right now, Chicago is often a actual donor to the state of Illinois, if you want to think about it like that when it comes to taxes.
Yeah, and Rich had the Capital Facts map this week that kind of pointed that out.
The Legislative Research Unit did a big report and showed, in fact, it's really the suburbs as well are donating a lot for for the rest of the state. And that's part of what taxes are due. Yeah. But, of course, everybody does want it to be fair. It should be fair. And that is very much at the heart of this debate right now. What is fair? What does it mean? What does it look like?
And fairness is that the affluent parts of the state help the less affluent parts of the state because we're all sharing the state and the economy.
That's the ecosystem, right?
And, you know, we're wasting our human resources when we're not investing in the people in downstate communities, rural communities, and the low-income neighborhoods in the city when we're not putting tax dollars in an equitable way. So I think that there's a point to having the city and the suburbs supporting the downstate areas. I also think there's a point to the city and the suburbs.
But let's be clear. I mean, I think just voters in general have reason to be ticked and suspicious because with all that has gone on in state government and city government, et cetera, you don't feel as if any of the people that are making decisions about your money are being good stewards of your money. And that is at the heart of all of this.
Well, the hardest part about it, and I think that we talk about it ad nauseum in talk shows and public affairs shows, things of that nature, the idea that even if you clean that up, let's say you clean up any sort of corruption or any sort of pay to play, or you clean up the way that, that government works, and an honest politician gets elected and comes in and goes, you know what? We're going to have to find a new source of revenue. It's the only way we're going to do this, because we just can't balance the books or just not pay enough. I can't cut anymore. I mean, kind of in a way, I'm telling the story of Tony Preckwinkle, you know, and says, we need this cat. Voters say, nope, bad, get out. And it's on.
There are surveys time and time again that show people don't want their services cut, and yet they also don't want to pay for them. And they don't like the word tax. That is an evil word. And yet it is also, I think, as a journalist, it is frustrating when you have a political figure lying through his or her teeth. And I think the public also is frustrated by that. It's disingenuous. And so there is a whole ton of that. I have to say, however, Toni Preckwinkle, I do put her in the loser column for this week. In terms of how that was handled, it may be a rational budget decision. I'm not an expert on the county budget. I can't say where cuts have or have not been made enough. But I do think
let's get to Preckwinkle in the next segment. But what I want to ask real quick as we wrap before we go to the news, the election's on. I mean,
the election's been on.
Formally, the Democrats' day has gone in a halfway, in a strange way. Governor's Day was there with the big American flag in the background on the county ground fairgrounds. So where are we at? I mean, is it J.B. Pritzker versus Governor Rauner at this point? I mean, what do we see in a 2018 gubernatorial race?
I don't think
race?
That we can say that yet, because there have been zero debates. There are most certainly going to be, judging from what the Republican Party has already put out against J.B. Pritzker, I'm assuming that there are going to be more hits against him as they try and ward off, have Rauner be the rich guy instead of going up against somebody who has even more money than him on the part of the Republican Party. It is too easy to say that right now, but he most certainly is the front runner.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's politics are often a horse race, but they're not always a race of thoroughbreds, you know. So you often are looking for the horse that is able to make it over the finish line, and you're looking at Daniel Biss is a really nice guy. I know him personally, and I know J.B. Pritzker personally. They're both very, very nice, cordial people. Daniel Biss's name recognition is in the single digits, I'm told.
Kennedy still has great Chris
exactly.
Kennedy is still very much in there.
I mean, there
is a very crowded field right now. Right. It is too early to say who the Democratic candidate is. Right.
Amanda Vinicky, Eitan McKaylee, we're reloading this week's news. We come back, we'll do overreported, underreported, which story took us down the rabbit hole, and which story we remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. Sound good? Sounds good. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Eitan McKaylee in studio with me, as well as Amanda Vinicky. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the overreported and underreported. Eitan, you had Antifa. Am I saying it right? I only know it by a hashtag.
Yeah.
Antifa.
I've heard many different pronunciations, but it's, you know, a reference to the anti-fascist group.
This is the anti-protesters that Trump said. Bad people on that side as
absolutely, well. Absolutely, right? Absolutely. And the probably numbers somewhere in the low thousands, I would imagine. If it's a lot bigger than that, I'll be totally shocked, of young people in the United States who are part of a subculture, really, that goes around the country battling neo-Nazis, which is also a relatively small group out there, although they have been emboldened certainly
and we've seen this in a couple of instances. Berkeley comes to mind. I think Ann Coulter was talking about Berkeley this week, and that was one that. But this is a group that, I mean, and I kind of chuckle, because I think you're right. I mean, it's a group that is pretty haggard that rolls around and follows the neo-Nazis.
It's a phase,
looking for a fight.
It's a phase of a particular group of young people that, you know, I imagine they'll outgrow by the time they get to be, you know, my age. And you hope the same thing on the neo-Nazi side, but which isn't to equate the two. One group is out there specifically to battle the group that explicitly wants to oppress large sections of the American population. So it's not to challenge the nobility of their mission. It is to say that these are idealistic young people who are going to be confronting the reality.
Overreported in the way that not to belittle their movement, but the strength in numbers. And we're not talking about a huge movement here. We're talking about a pretty small group that, because of this political argument that's happening this week, is acting like they have a political party.
It's also a small group of white people. It's the same thing as focusing on something like Black Lives Matters, which is also a small group of African Americans that are engaged in a particular political struggle. The broader struggle against white supremacy, against segregation, against discrimination in this country is a majoritarian struggle, certainly among African Americans and probably among at least historically whites in this country as well. That's a really different scale and a different sophistication of movement. Yeah.
Amanda, let's you and I shared the same on Overreported. The soda tax, as Ted McClellan, who's the author of How to Speak Midwestern, it's a pop tax. Why we keep calling it a soda tax.
I call
tax.
Everything Coke, frankly.
that's a Southern thing, he said. But the pop tax, the lawsuits against the businesses that can't figure out how to tax it, that the coverage of that, I think, is overreported in the way that it really is
the
about
coverage or – I'm sorry, maybe I dare to venture the lawsuits themselves. I mean, also, fix it. You are a major company. How a corporation like Walgreens doesn't have that figured out with however many accountants, McDonald's, what have you. That is bewildering to me. Everybody knew this tax was coming. That is why I put Tony Preckwinkle, however, in the loser camp, because I think it is. People were surprised by how high it is. It may be one thing to have a pop-soda-coke tax. It is another thing to have one that is a penny per ounce that really adds up like that. So you get why people are checking their receipts and looking at it.
Yeah.
And yet it's also like, I think the latest one, there was a tax after there had been a pre-tax price. And it's like, who looks at the,
but even
again,
beyond,
I'm not a rich woman, but who looks at their receipt that carefully
and
then goes and gets a lawyer. And then that turns into this overreported.
It's because,
pretty incredible.
We pay high taxes on beer, on alcohol, generally on cigarettes, on other kinds of vices, which it's fair to say that sweet sodas are a vice. You always have the option of not buying it.
Now, and I want to be very clear,
totally.
And I think that
this
we've
is
all
not
said
a debate
it.
About the, the soda tax itself.
Yeah.
We are just
lawsuits.
Saying the lawsuits and how much it was headline grabbing.
And I also believe in the loser category for President Preckwinkle. I mean, just the way that, I mean, this is not the proverbial fumble. I mean, this is like,
you know,
this is a wet,
there
rainy
are commercials
game, and the ball
now,
is bouncing around like a.
There are commercials now that are saying this is going for the safety of our kids. They don't want sugar. This is helping obesity. That should have happened before the tax was enacted, not after the fact. And that would have been the smart political role.
All right, let's move on to underreported stories. I have an underreported story, Asian carp. I thought that came out today, but it also, Amanda, it came out earlier in the week. I mean, this is something that has been talked about, but a lot, you could say everything in the news has been underreported based on everything that's happening in Washington. But
that is part of it. I mean, I think every show you could do what isn't covered because what Trump tweets / says, and by the way, what he tweets, I think I'm in the camp where who cares if it's on Twitter or what? It's the president, and he made a statement, and putting it and calling it on Twitter or saying it was a tweet almost makes it seem lesser than it is. It's a statement when you're the president of the United States and you're making it.
Let's talk about the Asian carp.
Asian carp,
that's an amazing story. They did an autopsy. First of all, I didn't know they did fish autopsy. That's cool. They did a whole analysis saying that this one fish that they found up the river, and I think in the Calumet, had jumped through. It had began its journey in the Mississippi. I forgot where. Rob knows because he said it a couple times tonight. But it had jumped three different checkpoints, electric barriers, or got around them to get 9 miles out from Lake Michigan. As Henry Henderson has said, and others have said who are in the environmental studies, they say if there's one, there's millions. This is not good that we have set up these electric barriers and forgot about this issue.
This is not just a new fish that will end up in the Great Lakes. That's what we have to make clear to folks, is that the damage of
these are beasts.
This particular species will dominate the, not just Lake Michigan, but will easily go on to other Great Lakes, and is really a destructive and invasive species.
Already you're seeing, I mean, I know I did a story when I first started with Chicago Tonight in January. I'm winter fishing, and I remarked, I was like, gosh, the water is this beautiful Caribbean blue. Guess what? It's not supposed to be that color. That is invasive species. And there is a lot of fascinating research on that, actually. Yes. In terms of what has happened, we thought that you had the Clean Water Act and that it was cleaned up, except for you had, nonetheless, ships carrying all these invasive species on their ballasts or what have you. And that has changed forever the makeup of the Great Lakes. And unless something is done about it, Asian carp is another element of that. Part of that is going to be, again, it all comes down to money, as yet again. And you have this report, I believe, that is suggesting certain things be done to keep the carp out. And the governor, at least via Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, who heads this Rivers Council for the state of Illinois by virtue of her position, say, no, we don't think it. That's too much. And they don't want to pay for it. I'm not an Asian carp expert. I will say that I have been up close to those bloody beasts again. I did the redneck fishing tournament. You go down to Bath in like central-ish Illinois, and you have there, right? Nets. I did this for fun. This was not a job. This was my good time. But I wore a helmet and goggles because just like the eclipse, I am prepared. And you can get injured. The captain of our boat had a fish hit him in the head and had to have like eye surgery. I mean, they are mean. They are big. They are going to have the big ramifications here, if they swim or jump.
And the problem with the Sanguinetti saying this is too much money, we don't want to do this, is there's no other alternative plan. And this is, I think, the criticism of not just the state, but the federal government, everybody involved. Now, what is the plan here? What is the plan to stop this fish from getting into the Great Lakes? And if a plan comes forward and they say, no, it's too much money, I'm a fiscal governor, I'm not going to let that happen.
What if it is too much money and it doesn't work? I do not know about.
We can just sit there like paralyzed. I mean, we got to make a move. Right?
This is what we were talking about earlier with Governor Rauner. Governor Rauner doesn't understand that some things, if they happen in the state, it doesn't matter whether they. The problem preceded his term, he will get the blame for the disaster.
Yeah, you don't want to be the governor that lets the
You don't want to be the governor that lets Michigan. You know, that destroys everybody's fishing season. You don't want to be the governor that destroys the lake, that destroys shipping on the lake, which is really some of the damage that can happen.
Eitan McKaylee, Amanda Vinicky in studio tonight. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about rabbit hole stories and which story will be remembered for 5, 10, 15, 20, 500 years from this week. Stay with us. Coming up, Steve Gadlin's going to join us for the Frying Pan at 10 o'clock tonight. Excited to have him back in studio. 312-981-7200. But we're reloading this week's news on the download. Eitan McKaylee and Amanda Vinicky. All right. So let's get in. This is my favorite. This is where I lean back a little bit and talk a little bit about
it. He literally did. I know this is radio, but he did lean back.
What story took you down the rabbit hole this week? I mean, what was the story that wasn't necessarily on the headlines that you went a little deeper on and thought about, even though no one was really talking about it? Eitan, why don't we start with you?
Well, so I was doing research for my next book, which is going to be about modern Israel. And so I was in Israel for most of July. And when I got back, I decided I wanted to check in on – there's a Facebook page for all of the homicides in the city, and it's
lists all the homicides.
Lists all the homicides, and it's a big community page where people, you know, often will express their condolences. Talk about people that they've lost right there on the page. So it's very direct and grassroots. Yeah. And I hadn't checked it the whole time I'd been in Israel, so it was just suddenly a shock to me to see all of the July homicides basically laid out in front of me, and one after the other, the headlines were all the same. You'd have the name of some young man between the ages of 17 and 28, most of them African American, but some of them Latino, maybe in an 80-20 ratio, and they would be all killed on their own block. That was what really stood out to me, is that these were young men
at home.
And you see the pictures one after the other. These are, you know, nice looking young men. These are, you know, people who
who don't fit the profile
that
we have in our head of some guy with tattoos.
This is the promise of America's youth. Frankly, it's like, you know, but for the fact that they're African American, they would be nice young people in a suburb or in many places around
the
country.
It's a fascinating project. I didn't know this Facebook page existed, but that's kind of powerful, informal. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just out there, and it's. And it was just something to see, really, you know, the heartbreaking story of where we are with crime and violence in this city.
Amanda, I've seen this story, the one that you want to talk about, but I saw this week when we talk about Governor Rauner. A lot of different stories in their headlines about, you know, Governor Rauner is the seventh best or seventh worst or 15th worst in the nation.
Ranking
where does he rank? But all of this idea of using different ways to rank our governor, and he does fit into a category of sort of upstart first term governors, Republican governors. Where does Governor Rauner stand? Is he, I mean, being sort of the anti-Trump, if you will, governor from Illinois, but a Republican who a lot of people
not anti-Trump. He is definitely not gone there.
Okay, but I mean, like, we'll go against the grain
mini
as he did.
Trump.
Yeah, mini. Well, that but that was my point, meaning that he sort of is on both sides in the way that. Anyway, where does he stand as from the fact of being a Republican governor in the country?
I think rankings-wise, you have him often placed in the most vulnerable category, just given that Illinois is classically a blue state, and clearly he has had a difficult couple of years trying to get his turnaround agenda passed and not having much success with that. Something I think everybody should keep an eye on is, despite that, you are having, we've clearly seen the U.S. Supreme Court has changed since there was last a ruling on a sort of, you know, right to work sort of issue. Mm. And so despite the governor maybe not getting his agenda through the General Assembly, I'll add that that is something that you can go down a rabbit hole on in terms of what is going to happen with a fair share union fight that the U.S. Supreme, an Illinois case could at some point reach the U.S. Supreme Court.
Is it on its way there?
It's on its way.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's something to keep an eye on. Right. Kind of an interesting Rauner story. I did just see a column about at least three current governors. So you have Minnesota, Tennessee, West Virginia, believed to be billionaires, and at least six other millionaires in the country. Obviously, we talked some about J.B. Pritzker, who almost makes Rauner look poor. The number of very wealthy candidates. So when we talk about money in politics, it is not just through donors. It is the candidates themselves and how very often you do see these rich guys. They are all frankly guys struggling once they get in. They use their money to win, but then obviously government is unlike something else.
That's
so
really
there's
interesting.
That.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That and the right to work stuff, because that was something early on you thought would move faster, and now it might because of the makeup of the Supreme Court. Mine, and quickly, is last night I thought Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live. I watched. It's funny because I watched the bit on tape. I watched it this morning, and I saw her eating the cake, and I thought it was hysterical. I was like, you know, it reminded me. I said the Second City training of this actress. To be able to perform with cake in her mouth and to be able to do everything she needs to do on point live on television is just astounding to me.
It's harder than people realize.
Yeah, I'm like, she's so gifted. And then I come to find out that there is a lot of backlash and people are angry with the message of the sketch in the sketch comedy show on a Thursday night on NBC. The sketch saying that if you have a problem with what you saw in Charlottesville, get a cake, eat a cake. And obviously it's a comedy bit. Obviously, it's, you know, that's not necessarily what she's.
It was phrased as "let them eat cake."
Let them eat cake,
like
right?
Kind of the Marie Antoinette.
I thought it was a
well
done sketch, but people were angry, saying, you know, there's backlash saying
this is a serious issue.
This is a serious issue. Why are you making fun of it? That's her job. But also at the same time, like we don't deal with this in cake. We deal with it with our fists. Like it's just. But I guess the point that I missed in the whole idea was that this is a comic. This is not a comment. It's not a politician. And so far, all the time this happens.
There's
where,
a lot of anger.
Yeah,
out
well, we
there.
Just where our comics become our commentators and our observers and our politicians and the people who uplift us or play piano on Saturday Night Live. And I'm like, you didn't go to Saturday Night Live in 1975 for John Belushi to be doing the Irish bit on the news for his political take to be puppeted the next day and the next day and the next day. I feel like we have put way too much on the backs of the Saturday Night Live writers and how we're supposed to react to them when it comes to modern American politics.
They're not equipped
no.
to handle that responsibility. It's a bunch of
is it a responsibility they asked for? I mean,
that's arguable. I mean, they were the ones that did the yeah. you know that played the Hallelujah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I
agree.
The election, so they
yeah. They add it. They bring it on themselves.
Yeah.
I get
but,
it.
But in terms of their ability to really, you know, it's a particular group of people. A lot, like you said, a lot of them Chicago Second City trained, but these are very hardworking, very young people that work 10, 12-hour days, don't have families, don't have...
It's a comedy bit, man.
Yeah.
It's a comedy bit.
Yeah.
She put cake in her mouth. I thought it was funny. I think at the end of the day, the backlash, the intellectualizing it, I was just like, it is a four-minute monologue where she eats cake and she makes a couple of jokes. I understand, like, if you're the butt of that joke, if you're someone who, you know, is a white supremacist or neo-Nazis, I can understand why you'd be mad at it. But the idea that that's not the right take for our society to respond to this, like, all right, knock it off.
I don't think that the neo-Nazis were watching SNL.
Well, you never know. Night, yeah. Hashtag knock it off. Yeah. That's the name of that segment. Knock it off.
Hashtag.
All right, so let's get to the final category here. Which story will be remembered from this week, 5, 10, 15, 500 years from now? I think we all probably have the same stories. Eitan, what do you got?
I this is a turning point. This is a crossroads in American culture. I don't know which way it's going to go. Is it going to be the beginning of a political deterioration like we have not seen before, like nobody has seen before, to quote our president? Or is it going to be, you know, the last few moments of peace and prosperity before the whole world descends into, you know, a kind of Skynet nuclear holocaust? But
that's the takeaway from this week. Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, you got to go Charlottesville, clearly, because of just that turning point. Hey, maybe Asian carp will be the 500-year story see the entire ecosystem of the Great Lakes turn over. Maybe that'll be the one.
My story that will remember in 500 years from now is that tomorrow, it still counts as this week, Mike Glennon will have a bad game. And Mitchell Trubisky will have a good game, and you will see a changing of the guard, a rookie quarterback that will start in Chicago and will become a Hall of Famer bigger than Brett Favre. Boom! And then from here on out, there'll be statues. And then
Justin's
500 years, we'll be having arguments about whether we should take that statue down.
Statues of football players?
Eitan McKaylee, Amanda Vinicky, Amanda, political reporter for WTTW, Eitan, the author of The Defender, How the Legendary Black Newspaper Changed America from the Age of the Pullman Porters to the Age of Obama. You guys, great job tonight reloading this week's news. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Love being here.
Oh, they're playing The Rush.
Yes.
So that means that Sandy Marshall's in the studio. Sandy Marshall, of course, a longtime friend of the station and the show, and of course the a writing partner of mine for a long time here in Chicago with the group Schadenfreude. Good to see you, buddy.
You too, Justin. Hi, Pete. Great to see you guys. Thanks so much for The Rush here in Free Will.
We did that because you live in Canada and you're also a Rush fan.
I am a huge Rush fan. I was just saying yesterday I've seen them 13 times. I saw one of their last concerts in Toronto. It's fantastic. And if you get the DVD,
you saw the same band 13 times.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I get the idea of the Grateful Dead, and there's like is there a culture that goes around with Rush? Is that a thing? Do people follow Rush?
People do follow Rush.
Follow Rush, but do people follow Rush?
People like me, dorks, typically follow Rush. They have a pretty big following, actually.
I know they got a big following, but do people follow them?
People follow them from city to city. It's not uncommon for somebody to travel to see Rush.
13 concerts, 5 women total.
That's
all
right.
Of those.
4 of them at the same concert.
What is it about following Rush? Why is that a life thing for you?
It's a fantastic live show. Their music is super eclectic, really diverse. It's progressive, so it changes a lot, kind of, you know, with the sets that they play. And, you know, they're just a great band. It's the kind of thing where I heard them in high school and I was like, I think this is going to be my favorite band for the rest of my life.
I have a lot of favorite bands. I just don't go to Indianapolis to see them.
I actually saw them in Indianapolis with my brother at like the outdoor sort of Staples Center. They're fantastic. But it's great to see you guys. Looks like the show's going great.
847 says, I live near Chicago and I've seen Rush over 50 times since 1978.
1978. That's amazing. That's around, I think, 2112 came out around then. So that's old school.
There you go. So you're not alone. 50 times. 50 times.
Did they see the final concert, the R40? Are they going to text back? Or can I ask
it
them?
It's not immediate. I'm not on a chat with them, so let them text back.
What they say?
They just said that. We'll just wait for 847 to text back. Right now, the person's shaking as they're texting.
Like, it's, I'm on. How's the show? The show looks like
show's
it's going
good.
Great.
Show's good. Yeah. Chicago's doing well. Good. I mean, as you know, Sandy lived in Chicago for years. He moved to Toronto, Canada. I've learned since in the last couple of months
that
it's not Toronto, it's Toronto.
This is news to you? I feel like we've talked about
this. No, I feel like I didn't know that. And I feel like I just read it somewhere. Maybe it was a Drake song. I don't know what it was, but I just realized that
it was a Drake song.
It might have been.
Yeah.
But it's Toronto. You don't pronounce the T.
No, you say Toronto.
Are you here because the Blue Jays are in town?
I'm not here because the Blue Jays are in town, but I heard that they are in town.
Yes.
I spend too much of my travel time seeing Rush. Now, I'm here to direct a Second City show. I've been here all week.
All right.
I'm here all week. I've got shows all week, you know, live every night.
What goes into directing a Second City show? What does that mean to direct? I thought it was improv.
It is improv and sketch. So there's improv games. Usually we'll rehearse like the intro to the game and just kind of what people are going to be doing generally. But most of the scenes, like when it's kind of a classic best of sort of a show, you just get the actors to make sure that they know the scenes. So it's putting together like a sketch review, usually about 45 or so minutes. This one's on a cruise ship.
So it's your job to make sure that the actor is saying, don't forget to tip your waitress.
That's exactly right.
That's the director of an improv show. They'll be like, hey, did you mention that there's a show coming up at 10? Did you mention that on the other side of this wall, there's another show? Like, you got to do that kind of stuff.
That is my one job. And then just filling 3 or 4 extra hours and seeing if we can look busy until 2.
847, Tim, it's Tim. Yes, he saw R40 in Chicago and Las Vegas.
In Vegas. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah,
nice.
He's got you beat.
Probably played at the MGM Grand.
And then 970 says, I've seen Rush 0 times. So just
970? That's the area code?
Yeah, it's the area code.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. They've seen them 0 times. All right. Disappointment.
So, yeah, so how's Canada? How's Toronto? What's
Canada's great. You know, having a good time, you know, laying out, you know, bear traps and getting maple syrup out of the trees. It's super cool. No, Toronto's great. I love it up there. This would be my 5th year living up there now. That's great. You should come do a download up there, man. Like, it's this like open invitation anytime you want to take the show on the
road.
Once
again, in an embarrassing fashion, we were thinking about a road trip coming up in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think I talked to you about this, but I was like, hey, I'm thinking about rolling up to Niagara Falls. Like, what would it take to get there?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that'd be fun. And I looked at the map, like I pulled the map up and I'm like, oh, Toronto's right there.
Yeah.
Like, I thought Toronto was somewhere else. Like, it'll be my ignorance. Everyone has never have I ever known where Toronto is. Like, I honestly thought it was a lot, like, more north. And I don't know why. It's just stuck in my head. So when I saw it on a map that it was that close to Niagara Falls and that close to, I guess, Michigan, I was like,
Dude, it's like an hour and a half flight from here. Yeah. It couldn't be easier to get there. And if you go to Niagara, it's 70 minutes away. It's closer than Arlington Heights.
Don't you remember the classic Linda McClellan? Remember her? She's a news person from Chicago, but she was grew up in Canada. And when the White Sox played Toronto in a big series, did they play them in the playoffs? It must have been a playoff series. Yeah. She went and she explained like everything you wanted to know about Canada and Toronto. And I remember her saying on the news, on the 10 p.m. news, doing a thing and saying like, and you know, when you're in Canada, if you say you're pissed, it means you're drunk.
And that stuck with you over the years.
It stuck with her from 1994.
23 years later. You're like, oh, wow. All right, Sandy. So let's talk about what we're going to do tonight because, you know, if people recognize your voice, you play a lot of different characters on the show.
We thank
do
you
bits.
For that.
Yeah, thank you. You've played everything from a hockey player, hockey analyst.
That's right.
You've also been a millionaire on the show.
Right.
You've done a lot of stuff in between. The Australian improv guy, one of my favorites. And I just want to say that I've always been a fan of your Australian improv guy. but what are we going to do?
I saw him outside, by the way. He's in the wings.
Oh,
yeah, we'll see. He's having some of the Billy Goat leftovers, but we'll see if he can make his way in.
So what are we going to do here?
Yeah, and I wanted to run this by you and Pete as
well.
Oh,
good to run us by now. Yeah,
on
sure.
On the cab right over, I wrote the Wheel of Bits, and it's like an interactive sort of game show where I present you guys with a few categories. You pick a category. And then we will just riff on bits that I wrote in the cab ride over. So they're sort of organized by categories.
I'm glad that, you know, it's been 2 weeks since I said, hey, why don't you come on Thursday the 18th? He said, I'll be there. I'll be prepared. So I'm glad that you put the work in the cab ride over.
That's right. Yeah, but I thought, you know, it was between Thursday and Friday.
It's an improv lifestyle.
So this is pretty much similar.
All right, what are the categories for the Wheel of Bits?
We have Chicago.
Okay.
Growing Older.
All right, that's a good one.
And Potpourri.
So there's three.
There's three. And
there's not even stamps on this? There's no stamps? Stamps
Growing Older might be similar to Potpourri. But it's you know, sort of kind of a bullet point of bits that we can sort of go through. Okay. And some of them are riff. Right. And I actually like to ask you, you know, some updates on Chicago.
Okay,
some
so that why don't we have Pete pick the category? There's Chicago, Growing Old, and Potpourri.
All right, let's spin the wheel. That's all I have because it's so small. Let's go Chicago.
Chicago, great. So let's talk about some observations from Chicago. So it's been maybe 6 months, I think, since I've been in Chicago. So here's a few things that I've noticed that may have changed. I want to check in with you guys to get your opinions on them to see if it's legit.
Right.
Okay. So I've been staying in the Old Town area. So it's a bit firewalled. So that sort of area between, you know, Schiller and North on Wells. But I noticed that O'Brien's restaurant is going to be turning into a hotel. Okay. Did you see this?
Did not see this.
O'Brien's restaurant is going to be turning into
O'Brien's
a hotel.
Famously putting the ads in the newspaper, right? Mm-hmm. That was like what O'Brien's was, the third page of the Sun-Times. Used to always be like an old alderman.
That's right.
Who would, like, you know, or Ed Kelly or something, be like,
right.
I dine here.
You dine know, very old school.
Like a bib on and some ribs, and like, hey, Ed Kelly loves O'Brien's. He's mm-hmm. got a look on his face like, arrgh. That was what O'Brien's was known for.
Yeah. Their photos are like black and white yearbook photos from the 70s. Everybody has the same sort of.
They're tearing that. Is it down? Is it gone?
Shirt. It is torn down and it's being converted into a hotel.
That's a bummer.
Into an antique hotel. I chatted with the owner, said the atrium is going to be shaped like a Polish sausage.
No, you didn't. That's not true.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
The funny thing about that, the restaurant's gone, but the ads remain. So that's nice.
They do remain. They're still there. Another thing I noticed in the hotel, I was watching the television and I picked up the remote control. I noticed that it's the same remote, except it says Xfinity now. So Comcast is out. And it's Xfinity.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think is it not Comcast? I mean, we still call it Comcast, but you're right, because when I have Comcast, and when you're right, it's Xfinity when I turn it on. So that's not really a really big Chicago observation. I mean, and very limited since you just... We're in your hotel room, so that's great that you spend a lot of time researching.
These are legitimate, transparent, super authentic things that I've observed over the past week in being here. So this is like putting it all on the table. This is legit.
So far,
all the, cards
the cab ride over, you saw that O'Brien's wasn't there anymore.
That's right.
And then the remote for the TV said Xfinity, and you're like, huh, used to be called Comcast.
Aaron Water Show's in town this weekend, and it seems like it's pretty loud. It was outside on a patio today in the Aaron Water Show. It's loud with those planes. That's still a thing? August 17 to 19, still around?
Still a thing.
Still happening?
They're practicing.
Still practicing?
Yeah. If you watch a Cubs broadcast during the Aaron Water Show, it's always fun to watch how they will come in and out of breaks with the Blue Angels.
Well, take a look at that. The Blue Angels. Get ready for the Aaron Water Show.
That's right. I pretty much nailed it, right?
That's it, yeah. And this year, of course, the man that will never go away, David Ross. Jumping out of a plane of some
sort. Do you know who David Ross is?
No, who's David Ross?
You've been away. Okay, so let me explain. How do you explain David Ross to a Toronto guy who doesn't care about baseball?
Who doesn't generally listen.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
David Ross is an old catcher. Like he's a good like almost 80s baseball player, like a 40 year old.
Oh, good.
Right? Who last year retired, and his final year he won the World Series.
Oh,
and he was like the spokesperson for the team. He was like the heart and soul of the team. Like, and he went on to be on Dancing with the Stars and have his own cereal. And did he win Dancing with the Stars or he lose? Then last he came in second place on Dancing with the Stars.
So 80s baseball players, same circa areas, sort of like Kent Herbeck.
A little bit later than Kent Herbeck.
A little later than Kent Herbeck.
Okay. Yeah, like I would say, like probably started his career in the 2000s.
The 2000s. Okay.
Herbeck was more of an 80s, mid 80s kind of.
Mid 80s kind of a guy. So later than Vince Coleman.
Later than Vince Coleman.
Later than Willie McGee.
Yep.
Great. Okay, got it. I saw a mutual friend of ours at Twin Anchors. Didn't get a chance to say hi. This
Twin Anchors, that's Rob Martier's favorite place.
Really?
Yeah, Martier loves that place.
Really?
Whenever you talk to Rob, wherever you talk to Rob and Rob says, you know what's a great, would be a great thing to do tonight? It's like the ideal date experience would go to Twin Anchors.
Really?
Loves it, yeah.
No matter what?
Yeah.
Just like sit outside and have the steak. It's great.
No, it's probably the ribs. You're probably sitting inside, but.
So I'm
not even sure there's
I'm 0 for 2 on the guessing in terms of what Rob prefers there. I saw our friend Tim Smith sitting outside. He's in town.
From the Walter E. Smith brothers. Yeah.
The middle brother of the Walter E. Smith brothers.
Yeah. Last time I saw him, you'll like this story. Mm-hmm. I saw him in the building.
Really?
And he said he doesn't live here. He lives in like the Caribbean.
Cool.
That's nice. What he told me. He said they moved his family and he runs a hotel in the Caribbean.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'm surprised it's the year he's back. But that when he was here, he's like, "That I'm back because I'm moving a piano." That's what he told me. I'm not making this up. I thought
really?
Of it. I
cool.
go, you're messing with me.
Yeah.
He's like, no, we moved down there. We love it.
Amazing.
And we live a whole different lifestyle. We're running a resort.
Is it connected with the O'Brien's Hotel? Maybe it's part of the
Could
O'Brien's.
Be.
The new
he's
O'Brien's.
Not. He's not actually. He's not actually with the. He's not a Walter E. Smith guy anymore.
Okay.
Like he sold his thing.
He's out.
I think so. Like, if you watch a commercial, that's why they're not on there anymore.
He took the E.
He took the E.
That was part of the
deal. He bought out the E, right.
That was part of the
deal. I liked him, man.
He's great.
Yeah, great guy.
I missed him. Do you want a new category?
Yeah, let's do a new category. Since
okay.
You wore that one out.
That was.
All right, I'll take Growing Old.
Growing Old. I have two nephews. They're 2 and 5. You have a kid. Pete, do you have kids? No kids. I don't have kids. I have two nephews. Apparently everything's Moana these days.
That's yeah.
Is that a thing?
It's
I haven't seen it, but have you seen Moana?
It's already on DVD. It's beyond the. It's not out. It's Oscar nominated.
Yeah,
last
great.
Year.
That and the fact that I pee all the time. That's getting older. Let's do a new category. We got one more. is potpourri? Do you want potpourri?
I guess we'll take potpourri.
An observation about two or three weeks ago, you were texting me insisting that I watch that Defiant Ones.
Yes, greatest show.
What a great
Wasn't
series.
That, great?
That was HBO series, mm-hmm. is that right? It was mm-hmm. 4 episodes.
Yep. Dr. Dre, Jimmy Iovine, yep.
The deal about beats and the whole thing. And I walked away from the Defiant Ones thinking, that's a good business series. It's like a business lesson disguised as a, you know, hip-hop history sort of series, I thought. So
that's great.
Steve Again. Bannon's out. A legit thing. It only took CNN 3 hours to put up the scroll. Steve banished.
I say he called himself or something. Did they call him a Bannon the Barbarian or something like that? Like that's what
he called himself.
Did
the
he
barbarian,
call him?
I think in the quote, yeah, somebody right. said, "I'm the Barbarian," and now the gloves are off, kind of.
Yeah, right. So, Bannon the Barbarian.
Yeah. And rounding out the potpourri, are you going to see the eclipse? What are you going to do for the eclipse?
That's a good question. We were talking about that earlier. I don't think Chicago is in the line of totality. So a lot of people, Amanda, who's in the reload, she's going to Carbondale. It's in Carbondale. It's
oh,
downstate.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's where everyone's going. We're actually doing a live broadcast. Steve Grisanich and Patty Vasquez
oh,
going
cool.
down to do live coverage of it on Monday. I don't know. I think we're going to just look out the window, maybe go outside, go to a point. But what do you think, Pete? Is it going to be in Chicago? Will it just go dark here?
I think it's 85% from the area here.
And I've been making jokes all night about it. But, I mean, knowing that Chicago has, like any big city, pollution and smog that blocks us from seeing anything above us, will that affect it? Like the idea that you barely could see the sun or the stars or anything anyway? Yeah. So I have a feeling I'm going to walk out there and be like, I'll show my son. I'll be like, huh, well, that's where it would be happening, right, if we didn't live right here. So that's, I think, what's going to happen.
My dad is hosting a big family thing in Columbia, Missouri.
Oh, that's right. That's in the line.
Right,
yeah.
In the middle
yeah.
of the 100% yeah. sort of coverage. I'll be away, but he's having a lot of people. My brother's going to go on the whole thing, and he's getting the glasses for everybody and then, you know, the NASA-approved glasses and the whole thing. And I was like, just don't look at it, man.
Just don't look at it.
That's the thing, right? Don't look at it and don't talk to it.
Sandy Marshall, A great buddy of mine from Schadenfreude in town because he's directing the Second City show and, of course, from Toronto and joins us all the time here on The Download. Great to see you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Justin. Pete, great to see you. Guys, have fun on the eclipse.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's The Download here at 720 WGN. Justin Kopp and Sandy Marshall sticking around.
Hi, Justin.
Thanks for sticking around.
Hello.
Didn't you hear that sound? You know what it means. It means it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Yeah. Gadlin's the brains behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat For You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. And before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's given us his exclusive business ideas so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Mark Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be here.
Yes, and welcome Sandy Marshall. Sandy Marshall, Steve Gadlin.
Hi, Steve.
What's up, Sandy?
All right, so let's. It's good to talk to you. It's been a month. I mean, we talk on text, and I was saying earlier in the show that you were very jubilant and optimistic, and you seem to be very excited about this week's idea.
Well, some weeks, you know, you have a winner, and I think this is one of those weeks, Justin.
All right, there you go. So why don't we do this then? You know what? Let's stop dancing around and get right to it. Steve Gadlin, what's your idea for this week's frying pan?
Okay, well, if I were to ask you what are people's two favorite things in the world, Justin, what would you say?
Sandy?
Two favorite things in the world, probably hamburgers and vacations.
Well, you're close. You're close, Sandy. Actually, people's favorite food is the pickle. Okay, so that's the first favorite thing. And the second favorite thing is the nickel. Now, you might notice that those two things rhyme. And the invention that I came up with, quite a brilliant one, if I might add, is called the Nichols Pickles. Well, hey, what does the Nichols Pickles do is probably what you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're almost done with a jar of pickles and you got that one pickle left, it's always such a shame to take up all of that refrigerator real estate with a big jar just to hold one pickle. So what I have is a single pickle-sized receptacle that can store one pickle in your fridge. And because it rhymes and because people love to chill their nickels, I've got a little sidecar, plastic tube on the side, where you can store some extra nickels. So what you end up with is a perfectly preserved pickle. And then the next time you go out to spend a few bucks, you can put some chilled nickels in your pocket and have a real good time.
Okay, Nichols Pickles.
Yes, sir.
A device in which you can store loose pickles and
chill
some nickels.
You know, I think it's common knowledge that the pickle jar is poorly designed, and the pickle jars have been the same for probably 90 to 100 years. Because what happens is as the number of pickles in the jar diminish, the size of the jar stays the same, and that takes up some valuable refrigerator real estate. Mm. So what you're able to do with the Nichols Pickles is pop one pickle in that tube and take up much less space when you're down to that final pickle. And because people just love to chill their nickels, Justin, we've got a little sidecar tube there where you store your nickels so you can take some chilled nickels out in the town.
Okay. All right. So there you go. Nichols Pickles is this week's frying pan invention from Steve Gadlin. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What do we think of Nichols Pickles? Do we like it? Yay or nay? We got questions. I know Sandy, our guest tonight, has got some questions, I'm sure. Sandy?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Steve. Thanks, Justin. With the nickels, with that sort of sidecar you're talking about, how many nickels does the sidecar hold?
Actually, it stores 40 nickels.
Okay.
The equivalent of two single dollar bills. We find through research that that's the optimum number of nickels, to take out on the town. And I tell you, there's no more opulent thing to do than spend a chilled nickel. That's a way to tell the purveyor of whatever goods you're purchasing that you are a man about town and a man who's thought ahead before going out shopping.
Okay.
So is that that's a thing? Chilling nickels? Chilled nickels?
Yeah.
I'm
you've never heard of chilled
nickels. I've never heard of chilled nickels, but that's me. I mean, so
Justin,
We may hang in different circles.
Yeah.
The circles that I hang in, again, there is no more opulent thing to do than spend a chilled nickel. And you look at the face on that cashier when they receive that chilled nickel, they'll probably give you a wink and know, now there's a man about town. Now, that's really just a side thing, okay? The real important piece of this invention is the way you can chill one single pickle in your refrigerator and take up much less real estate than you would with a full pickle jar.
All right, the idea is called Nichols Pickles, as you heard from inventor, entrepreneur, and innovator Steve Gadlin. Tonight's frying pan, Nichols Pickles. What do we think, Download Nation? 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll ask some more questions, see if we can poke some holes in it, and get a yay or nay on Nichols Pickles. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's time for the frying pan. Steve Gadlin on the line right now. Sandy Marshall, our guest panelist for the frying pan tonight. Okay, so tonight's idea is called the Nichols Pickles. It is a invention that, well, I'll let Steve explain. Give us the elevator pitch again on Nichols Pickles.
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted to hit you with an object with dual purpose tonight because I thought if one of them can't win your audience over, maybe the other one can. So the primary purpose, of course, is to chill a single pickle. And we all know that's important because as the number of pickles left in your pickle jar decrease, that jar stays the same size. So this allows you to chill that final pickle and take up a lot less real estate in that refrigerator. And as a side function, because it's something we all love to do anyway, we throw on a nickel chiller on the side there, a little sidecar that stores about 40 nickels to let you chill your nickels before you head out into the town to shop.
Right. Okay. I've got questions. 312-981-7200. And I know the people at home give questions, and Sandy does as well.
Yeah.
Why don't we do 773? First of all, that's what Tupperware products are for. And secondly, by the time you get to the store to spend the nickel, it's been sitting in your pocket getting warm. So it's no longer a chilled nickel, right?
Well, that's where your texture is wrong. That sidecar tube actually detaches from the main pickle chiller. So you put that tube in your pocket, and that's an insulated tube. So those nickels are going to stay finely chilled. I don't care if you're traveling all the way across the town to do your shopping. Those nickels will be perfectly chilled when you arrive.
970 has a question, but won't the cost of the Nichols Pickles be not worth the cost, which would be like $2 to $3, because the pickle jar itself would cost only a little more, and to spend the same amount of money almost on just one thing that holds one pickle, it's not worth the cost?
Well, I tell you, you're still purchasing that pickle jar because, as everyone knows, pickles don't come single. They come in a jar. So this is really something you would keep in your cabinet. And then when you get down to that final pickle, you can clear out a little fridge space by putting that final pickle right in the Nichols Pickles and sliding that in your fridge.
Sandy, you have a question?
I think everybody gets the dedicated pickle holder. I don't think anybody's
right.
Hung up on that. I think the extension of the nickel holder, it seems like it's sort of you're forcing that into the cleverness of the Nichols Pickles, and I'm wondering if you wouldn't. Yeah, I wonder if it's just not more marketable. And I do like some marketing and business
stuff. You're a marketing
guy,
your business
guy. I'm a marketing guy as well. Like, I just wonder if it's not more of a marketable thing as just the pickle holder. I like the Nichols thing. I think it's catchy. It seems sort of 1920s-ish or something, but I don't know. I'm just.
Well, here's the thing: people have to chill their nickels anyway. So whether they do it with my tool or with whatever tool they're using today, that's irrelevant. What we're trying to do is make that a little easier. We're clearing real estate in that fridge with a couple things, you know, that we're providing them with a nickel chiller, again, something they need anyway, something they're probably using very inefficiently to this day. So that just attaches straight to the pickle chiller and, you know, provides two functions at once.
All right, let's go to Judy. Judy, yay or nay to Nichols Pickles?
What?
Yay or nay to Nichols Pickles, Judy?
Nay. Oh.
Why?
Why? I have a few reasons. I've been around refrigerators for over 50 years, okay? What is wrong with taking a heavy Ziploc, you know, appropriate size bag? You could even put some of the bottom juice that's left from pickle jar into that
Ziploc,
and putting
right.
into your refrigerator. I mean, you make sure that you've let out the air so it's not taking up more real estate, which you should have thought of to begin with before you bought something so big.
Right.
If that's going to be an issue.
Right. Thanks, Judy. What do you think? I mean, Judy makes a good point there, Steve, that wouldn't a Ziploc bag, and this is also shared on text as well, wouldn't a Ziploc bag do the same thing?
Actually, Judy makes a bad point, Justin. A Ziploc bag, sure, you can store whatever you want in a Ziploc bag, but for every Ziploc bag that you store a pickle in, that's one fewer sandwich that you can store in a Ziploc bag. So if you want to spend thousands of dollars on Ziploc bags every month, that's fine. You go right ahead. But with the Nichols Pickles, you have a reusable product that you can use over and over again. And I checked recently. I don't think I've ever seen a Ziploc bag with a sidecar nickel chiller.
847 asked the question, is it designed for pickle chips, spears, sandwich slices, or for the entire pickle?
Well, it's designed for the full pickle. One thing that I did think of earlier was that we might release different versions for different pickle styles. Though I'll tell you, those sliced pickles and the spear pickles, we find those are mainly for decoration at the stores. Not too many people purchase them in that form. The most popular version of the pickle is the full-on pickle. So that's what we're focusing on first.
Mm-hmm. Again... The single pickle holder, no hang up on that at all. I think it's a great idea, and I could actually see that in your grocery store aisle for real.
Yeah,
like no bits. The thing that I think the chilled Nichols is a bit niche for me to wrap my head around, and I'm just thinking from a marketing perspective. I wonder if it's just going to draw in more of an objection to buy it, because there's the idea of buying it's like you're mentioning like a sidecar. It sounds like it's a motorcycle with a sidecar.
Yeah, it's got
it's almost, it seems like a toy sort of a design in the fridge. What does it look like? We haven't even talked about the product.
Well, it looks
design.
Just like the pickle part, but it's thinner. Okay. You know, it's the same cylindrical insulated device, metallic outside, and sort of a what do you call it? It's the same stuff you use in your attic insulation, that pink fiberglass material on the inside, and then you slide your nickels in there. So it's, you know, I got to ask Sandy, how do you chill your nickels? I don't understand where the confusion is.
I got to be honest, Steve, I don't chill my nickels. I, you know, pay for most
are you?
I'm 43, and I pay for most things with, like, my debit card or cash. Actually, mostly with, like, the debit.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are a lot of questions, Steve, about the concept of chilled nickels on text. 815, I'll just read this one, but it's representative of several texts. But why do nickels need to be chilled?
Well, again, it's a sign of opulence. It's, you know, when I go out and I pay for something, if I'm at the Walgreens, for instance, and I'm paying for a candy bar, I'll sling, you know, 14 chilled nickels on the counter. And that cashier knows that I'm in business, knows that I'm an experienced shopper, knows that I'm a man of the world and a man about town. So, you know, I think everyone knows, and maybe it's just a handful of your texters who aren't familiar with the practice of chilling your nickels. It's a prestige thing. It's similar to wearing a derby cap.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with the prestige of it, but okay, I'll take
Stock
your word for
garters.
It.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Gary. Gary, yay or nay, Gary, on Nichols Pickles.
Hey, with the prestige thing, then you already have a nice size jar with one pickle in it, so why not take that and fill that all with nickels? And then you have many more chilled nickels.
And put that in the fridge, right? And,
come on.
Right.
Come on.
Right. And then not only do you have more nickels to impress that girl with, they smell like pickle juice.
There you go.
Yeah. No, you don't pay for things with brined nickels. I think that's purchasing 101. And if you are paying for things with brined nickels, I'd count your change on the way out because they've already picked it for a second.
I know Sandy does a lot with Marketing 101, so you agree with that. Brian Nichols are a no.
No, I think that's going to turn audiences off. I don't see that being popular like in a physical space or on the internet.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's good to hear that validation from a marketing expert.
773 says, I'm 30 years old. I know I'm young, but the nickel thing makes me wonder if his brain has been chilled too long. But the pickle thing, great. Yay.
Okay, well, again, you know, it's a multi-purpose invention, so I think we should count that among the yays overall.
And 630 says 14 chilled nickels, which are referred to when you threw the chilled nickels on the counter, is only 70 cents. No candy costs 70 cents anymore.
Well, actually, if you've been to Walgreens recently, they do have a lot of seasonal sales. So I beg to differ.
Okay. What about the?
I'll be honest, that was impromptu math, okay. So I may have been off.
847 says, what about the whole pickle? They come in varying sizes. So the whole pickle could be from real small to very large, but the pickle size is a variable.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I should specify that the pickle side of the pickle chiller is nearly as large as a full pickle jar, just to accommodate for pickles that may be, you know, of a larger variety. So we've got that covered.
But when you're talking about the pickle side of the pickle chiller, there's no pickle side to the pickle chiller. That's the main chamber, right? Is the pickle chiller. The nickel chiller is the sidecar.
So yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But the pickle side, the main part, the pickle chiller is very large so as to accommodate multiple sizes of pickle.
All right, 312.
The last thing we want, like my nightmare, is that someone buys the Nichols pickles, comes home, finishes off to the last pickle and tries to cram it in there and just can't fit it in either side. So that to me is a failed sale. Yeah.
312-981-7200. More texts and calls coming in. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll do the second half of The Frying Pan tonight. Nichols Pickles. Steve Gadlin, stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It is time for The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin, the inventor, innovator, entrepreneur who did IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on the game show Shark Tank. He got Mark Cuban to be a principal investor and to get a development deal. So now, before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them to the Download Here to poke some holes in, to essentially research, you know, to workshop it.
Right.
Sandy Marshall, panelist tonight.
Hi, Justin.
Steve Gadlin on the line. Tonight's idea, the elevator pitch once again for Nichols Pickles.
Yeah, well, it's a multi-purpose device, which is very rare these days in your kitchen stores. But what you purchase is the Nichols Pickles. It is a two-chambered chilling device. That first chamber will store your final pickle in a pickle jar and help you clear out some of that real estate that those large, unwieldy pickle jars take up. And the second chamber holds a stack of 40 pickles, so you can chill your... Oh, sorry, I'm sorry, not a stack of 40 pickles. A stack of 40 nickels.
You're getting caught up
so
there,
you can, that's right, so you can chill your nickels, which is something we're all doing anyway. So what this does is it really clears out that refrigerator real estate, which is so valuable, especially in this day and age with the economy and studio apartments.
Right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the lines. Let's go to Mary. Mary, yay or nay on Nichols Pickles?
I like the idea, but instead of being nickels, it should be quarters because more people use quarters for their laundry and everything else instead of being nickels.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Steve? What about changing it from nickels to quarters? Thanks, Mary.
I've not met one person who chills their quarters. That's ridiculous. Everyone knows chilling your nickels is a sign of prestige. It's a sign of sophistication. If you chill your quarters, you're basically exposing yourself as a Dummkopf, as the Germans might say.
Oh, okay. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, yay or nay on this one? Yay or nay on Nichols Pickles?
Definitely a no.
Okay. Why do you say no?
Well, if you only have one pickle left, you just, like the previous caller said, you put it in a plastic Ziploc bag or you eat it.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as nickels, who wants to carry 40 nickels around with them?
Yeah, Steve?
Well, you don't have to carry all 40 of them around with you, but you can chill 40 and be silly. You know, if you carry 3 nickels, it'd be silly to sell a device that only chills 3 nickels, because when you get home and you need to refill your pocket, you're going to need another 3. So I don't understand the problem with, you know, show me the real man that can't carry 40 nickels.
Kevin?
I'll just say that.
There ain't no man that would want to carry 40 nickels.
Steve?
I mean, why carry 40 nickels when you carry $2 bills on your pocket?
Well, because you don't chill your dollar bills. And again, it's a real sign of prestige and sophistication. You know, it's the caste system is real, okay? So using those chilled nickels is a way you show the world that you're a man about town and you're a true gentleman. So why would you not want to carry 40 chilled nickels?
Well, I've never heard of chilling nickels before in my life anyway.
Well, have you ever heard of a top hat? Apparently not. I bet you've never heard of a bow tie either.
Well, that's totally different than chilling nickels.
No, they're pretty much the same thing. You know, we wear a bow tie or a top hat to show our sophistication, and we carry chilled nickels and spend them, again, to show the same thing, to send those same signals.
All right, thanks.
That must be a different class of people than I am.
Yeah,
thanks. Anybody I've ever talked to.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Thank you for that. I have to agree with Kevin in a certain sense. I also know that Sandy does a lot of marketing and business in his line of work. Both of us just in the news looking for chilling nickels. It doesn't show up like a top hat or a bow tie would on the internet. You're not seeing that as much. So you're getting very specific, very niche, very specialty with
the
chilled nickels. It's
a need-to-know thing. It's not the type of thing people go memeing about on the interwebs. So, I have a feeling you're just not letting some of the callers through that understand chilling nickels and who do so on a regular basis. If you were to step outside of your ivory tower over there at Michigan Avenue and ask, 10 people, if they've got chilled nickels in their pockets, my wager would be 8 of them do. And the other 2 probably aren't from the city. That's for sure.
All right, let's go to Arnold. Arnold, yay or nay on Nickels Pickles?
All right, listen up, Nickels Pickles. You are absolutely sick. You are a sick person.
Oh, all right. Jeez, wow. Arnold got mad. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't. I work with a few people who use the word sick as a compliment, so I'm going to jump to that conclusion.
All right, let's keep going. Let's do Greg. Greg, yay or nay on Nickels Pickles?
Oh, yeah, they're great. I mean, I used to live down in the southern states. I used to freeze my nickels, and I'm just wondering could you overchill the nickels? Like, I'm in the wine business. If you overchill a wine, it isn't, so good.
Yeah.
Temperature should they be chilled at? Looks like the perfect chilling.
Yeah.
Great question. Great question, Greg.
I have to say, it is so nice to hear the voice of a real gentleman on the phone.
Okay.
I'd say, what I do when I set my refrigerator to the 3 setting, which is not the coldest it can be, but it's definitely far from the warmest it can be. And I find that to be the perfect temperature for chilling both pickles and nickels. One of the nice things about my product is the insulation is variable. So that insulation on the pickle is a little tighter. That fiberglass, it butts right up against the pickle. So you've got that nice fiberglass insulation touching the pickle and making sure it stays at the appropriate temperature. And same with the nickels, but with a thinner insulation so it can get a little colder.
Sandy,
if you're going to take this idea to Mark Cuban and legitimately pitch Nickels Pickles, he's going to ask you, what is your go-to-market strategy? How are you going to get this in stores? And he's going to ask you, what's the marketing look and feel? This sounds like when you're talking about the man about town and the top hat, I keep thinking of like the Monopoly guy. Like that's something that's sort of like a throwback.
Now there's a
to
fellow
the
that
world.
Probably chills his nickels. Yeah.
But I wonder if that isn't more at home in like 1920. I wonder if it's just not a bit dated, and I wonder if it's a good idea to just maybe leave the nickels behind and just focus on the pickles.
Well, what you have to understand, Sandy, is a lot of products sold today are aspirational. Okay, so, fine steaks in your grocer's freezer section. You've got people purchasing fine steaks who probably aren't really qualified to cook a fine steak. But again, you have that aspirational quality of people wanting to live the fine life. And I think that's where the nickel side of the pickle chiller comes in. It's everyone wants to chill their pickles, right? And everyone wishes they were the kind of guy or girl that chilled their nickels. So we pair those two things together, and I think, quite frankly, we're going to have a home run.
All right, let's try Mike. Mike, yay or nay? You like Nickels Pickles?
The pickle party, yes. The nickel thing, I'm stymied. I'm stumped about. I'm 61 years old. I've had many jobs where I handle revenue. I have never in my entire life heard of chilled nickels. When and where and who originated this? Why is it so prestigious to have coins that are chilled? Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Same.
How did it originate? Where? Who? When?
Well, from very wealthy people. You know, what they would do is would chill their nickels. Because here's the thing. A nickel is not the best coin in the coin jar. Can we agree there?
Yes, we agree, yeah.
Yeah, so what the wealthy would do, because we all have to spend them, is they would chill them to send a signal to the people receiving the money that, yes, they're spending nickels, but they are sophisticated people. They are beyond the nickel, okay? So a chilled nickel would send that signal.
That they're beyond.
That, yes, I'm spending a nickel, but I am a sophisticated man or woman about town.
I've never heard of this. Where did it originate? When?
Well, are you, you'll have to pardon the expression, but are you a bumpkin?
No, I was born in Chicago, grew up in the suburbs, and I currently live in southern Wisconsin, bumpkin country, but I drove taxis and limos all over the Chicago area. I used to wait on tables. I've handled revenue in many jobs. Yeah. I've never heard of a chilled nickel.
I agree.
Ever.
I'm with you, Mike. I agree with Mike, and I know Sandy does too because we're both shaking her head. I mean, I don't think that Mike's alone. I mean, I would put myself in the bumpkin category just in the sense that I'd never heard of this idea.
Wow. Well, I wouldn't admit that in fancy company.
All right. One more caller before we go to the break. Let's go to Pete. Pete, yay or nay on Nickels Pickles?
Well, it's not just that, but I heard that today is considered Bad Poetry Day. So my thing is, if you're going to chill a nickel with a pickle, how about chilling a dime in the brine?
Oh, that's great. That's great, Pete. How about the dime in the brine? You could add to this invention, Steve.
Yeah, I'm not into poetry. I'll just say that.
I like it.
Yeah, me too. 312-981-7200. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get everybody on the line. I've got a million texts, so we'll just try to rapid fire, get some of the colorful stuff out there, test the emotional metal of this idea, Nickels Pickles, with Steve Gadlin, the inventor. We're doing the frying pan. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
All right, it's a frying pan. We're wrapping it up tonight. Nickels Pickles is the idea. Steve Gadlin is the guy behind that idea. He's on the line. Okay, so let's get right to this. I want to bring in Sherry. Let's do Sherry, and then we'll continue to get the text in. Sherry, what do you think of Nickels Pickles?
Hi. I love pickles, and I would love to take one to work to eat at lunch. However, the one thing that really me as a killer is that the sanitary reason of putting dirty money in my refrigerator, putting a pickle in the container and then touching dirty money, and that's not good for me.
Well, Sherry, the only thing the pickle actually touches is the fiberglass insulation. The nickels are in a separate chamber, and they touch their own fiberglass, so they don't touch the pickle. So the pickle just butts up against this nice, fluffy pink fiberglass to keep it at the perfect temperature.
Just to jump in, Steve, I think what Sherry's saying, it's not as much about the nickels being close to the pickle. It's the fact that nickels are a magnet for bacteria, and they're going into the fridge in the first place.
Well, but they're sealed. They're sealed, so I wouldn't worry about that. I think everybody should just take a chill pill on that one.
Also, it's been a while since we've had the discussion about fiberglass and food. I've probably done that segment before, but not in a while. But it just seems like that's probably not the strongest idea because you eat the pickle, you know, skin and all. So why would you want to eat something that's up against fiberglass?
Yeah.
Well, fiberglass is nature's cotton candy.
Well, it's not. It's synthetic. It's not nature.
I've seen the commercials. It's nature's cotton candy.
It's actually glass that cuts you.
Nature's cotton candy.
815 says, you said the pickle holder was larger so that it would take up as much refrigerator space as a regular pickle jar. What? Can you describe the dimensions of the nickel pickle holder?
Well, imagine the largest pickle you've ever seen in your life. Double it, that's the size of the holder. Because what we want to, you know, again, my nightmare scenario is someone buys the Nickels Pickles, has a final pickle, and tries to put it in, and it just won't fit.
Right. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go through some of the colorful stuff. This is the part that tests the mettle of not just the product, but the inventor, because some of the things are going to be harsh, and I'm going to set it up that way. That's why we do this segment late at night. 773 says, I think this guy's brain is pickled. Heard that. I don't know.
That's funny. It's not. It's not, though.
Is there anyone? Okay, let's see here. Okay, here we go. WGN Radio, this one's for management. How much time have you wasted on this guy? This guy is not a good inventor, and he is a total idiot.
Well, that's just that person's opinion.
Okay. Why do you bother with this guy? Why do you bother with this segment? Can't you come up with something better? Someone real, someone who's not an idiot.
You know, you could say that. If you watch any movie that's ever garnered an Oscar, you could probably say the same thing.
Okay.
And what I mean by
that
is, if you look long enough at anything, you'll find something to criticize about it.
Okay. All right. What a joke.
And it's actually an honor that these people have looked long enough at this segment that they find something to criticize about it.
The inventor is an F idiot. Says departure from the idiot. They're now doing adjectives in front of the idiot.
Okay.
317 says, I always chill my nickels. So there you go.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's validating, and I'm glad again. Apparently, Justin, you have a gentleman that listens to your program.
There you go. 630 says, in an emergency, can you use it to preserve a severed finger?
Yeah, you can, but again, that's not the intended purpose of this. Part of the problem, actually, if you put a severed finger into the device, because it is Bluetooth compatible, it will send an alert to your phone that there is a non-nickel and non-pickle item stored within one of the chambers.
Yeah. Someone did ask if it was Bluetooth compatible.
Oh, of course.
847 says this guy is more full of himself than any pickle jar that he's ever seen. Not to mention rude. You got rude in there as well.
I don't feel like I've been rude tonight.
You're just referring back to some of the times when you were absolutely rude.
Possibly,
right?
Yeah. But again, an honor that they've spent so much time focusing on this segment.
No, Mr. Gadlin, I won't tickle your pickle, not even for a cold nickel. 815, that's pretty good.
Okay. Great. That's good. Yeah. Not a fan of poetry, but okay.
773 has a, could just eat the last damn pickle.
Well, that's an option. But again, I don't want to. You know, there's sometimes the second to last pickle is you eating the last pickle, and then you realize, oh, there's another one, and I'm so full of pickle, I just couldn't.
815 says, Steve Gadlin from Nichols Pickle seems like a pervert. Either way, it's very creepy.
Well, how does this translate?
I'm just saying what they're writing. I'm not editorializing.
Just unfiltered.
It's unfiltered. I think this. You could be in a situation on Shark Tank where someone says that.
Well, you know, they do anything for good television, so it's entirely possible.
Okay. Can you instead of chilling your nickels? Can you can your nickels?
Well, sure. If you want the full-on real estate of a full-size can in your refrigerator, but again, the Nichols Pickles has a nickel-width chamber, plus 1 inch on all sides to hold the insulation, so it's more compact.
Right.
I think they're talking about canning in a pantry, right?
Where
you can. That wouldn't chill. That wouldn't chill your nickels, unless you can it with ice.
That's what the question is. Would you can...
No,
put ice in it.
You can, but I wouldn't, and I wouldn't accept any wooden nickels. That is a little humor.
Right. And then finally tonight, which, you know, I hesitate to read this one. Well, 224 says this guy's so arrogant, it's horrible. But the last one, which is a pretty simple text, it just says, die, pickle boy. And I'm not sure if that's at you or if that's just at
we had put together. German before,
and
actually you might be reading it something that says "Die Pickle Boy,"
right?
Which means the pickle boy.
That's true. So I didn't think about that.
I'm labeling. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So Sandy, if you were a panelist on a show like Shark Tank, would you go yay or nay on the Nichols Pickles?
I would have to say nay. I like the pickle holder. The nickel holder, I'm hung up on. I don't think it relates to the pickle holder. There's no go-to-market strategy. We haven't even heard anything about how you're going to get this onto shelves. And I've asked you.
Yeah, well, Sandy misheard the question. He thought you said if you were on Horse Tank, what would you say? Hence the nay.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. All right, Steve Gadlin, once again, monthly here on the Frying Pan, Nickels Pickles. Not a bad showing, but I think you still got to go back to the drawing board. Steve, always a pleasure. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, it was great to be on air with Sandy tonight. So thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.